Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Call the roll, please.
Yes, Bobby Gillis.
Here.
Sharon Tobias.
Here.
Jeff Jones.
Here.
Dan Murphy.
Still
absent. Bill.
Here.
Oh. Dan's here on the phone.
Dan Cooper.
No, Dan Cosby.
I can't do this, you guys.
Yeah. Bill Cooper.
Bill Cooper's here, and Dan Crosby's on the phone.
Okay.
Here, you got it all? Thank you.
Paul Penny's absent. Can't do that without a cheat sheet. And Andy Rich is not.
Well, I'd like to welcome everyone to the meeting this morning. Thank you all for coming. I know it's a hassle. On the matter of the consent calendar, there are three items. Anyone who wished to have any one of the three pulled off and discussed? If not, I'll take a motion to accept the consent calendar.
So moved.
I'll second it.
All those in favor signify by saying aye, and opposed, no.
Aye.
Aye.
Good, that's enough. Good. Item 2A. Mr. Hicks.
Okay, the infrastructure project. The weather's been pretty good up until now, so Mazingo has been came in and they're working on replacing the hydrants in Unit 13. Bill's been working with them. We've had to do a lot of shutdowns. But they have replaced about, what would you say, 18 hydrants?
Yeah, there's
like five left. And it's been, it's been pretty good. What would you say, Bill? Pretty good.
Yeah,
not too bad. We've had some, a lot of shutdowns, but they're getting it done. They're also, they've worked on the punch list for the west side of Moran, and they've got a lot of it done. There's a few more items they have to do yet. We're going over those, and there are some areas that washed out last winter that we are looking at putting a coating on to prevent them. If we get a big rain event like we had, to prevent that, any washouts that could happen, we're working with the county on that. There's a couple of options that we looked at, and one is some kind of a chip seal coating that would be sprayed on the rock to prevent it from washing out when the water comes out. Also, we have to deal with the homeowners' culverts. A lot of homeowners don't clean their culverts. They don't even know they're supposed to clean them. So those are plugged up, and it causes the water to change direction and tends to go crazy all over the place. So that is something that I think it's going to get better over the years when people find out they have to do it. But right now it's kind of a problem. I think somebody could really make some money doing that job, cleaning out culverts for people. But anyway. And some up on the board there, you can see the, I'll show you here, some of the ideas. Here's our trench with a pipe in it, and here's the county ditch. So they're thinking about this slurry or chip seal poured on that affected area, and then made some riprap on the, here's a little riprap that we put here, and then make sure the ditches are empty of any of the rock, that some of the rock from the project ended up in some of the county ditches, be able to take that out. So we're working on trying to get those.
What's the spec on that chip seal?
I don't know yet.
Oh.
We just got, John Petty just got a hold of the company Valley Slurry Seal. That's the company name, and they've got a couple products that they, I guess we tried putting on something.
Yeah, we, John Petry came up with a, some kind of a binding agent. It's a mop-on or spray-on type of agent that goes on the gravel. We put it on there. It's not really cost-effective. I don't think it's going to work, but he bought it, so we applied it and see what it's going to do over the storm.
Is it supposed to be a permanent fix or just a temporary?
It says to reapply. I read the instructions on everything. It says to reapply when needed, so we'll see how long that lasts.
Excuse me before you go ahead, but everybody has to understand what chip seal is, or slurry sealing.
Slurry seal,
yeah.
It's very similar.
But that, we'll see. I think the chip seal is the more permanent fix.
Is it a cold application? Or
yeah, it just looks like milk. You just pour it on and it dries up clear and it's supposed to work for walkways.
Cities are using it to seal cracks in the roadways, and it's cheaper than laying asphalt or any type of hot mix. It doesn't last very long. It's cheap, and that's, you get what you pay for with the stuff, to tell you the truth.
So that's what we're trying to do there. You know, we have our geotech talking to us about this rock problem. And he, you know, we'll just see. We'll see how it works. We have med compaction on all the ditches. And we will keep working on that with the county. Let's see, we... There. Some of the compaction tests on the paving came in a little bit low. Not very many, but there's a few. When they pave, they take compaction tests at the time with the hand unit. So a nuclear thing, they pound it in. But some of them, a couple of them came in low. So we met with the county public works guy on Thursday with the geotech, and so what our geotech did was go out and take core samples of all these areas, and except we have one more area to do yet, but the core samples showed that the compaction tests taken at the time of the paving were off a little bit, and it brought the numbers up. It's supposed to be 91% compaction. We had some 87s. So the core samples showed brought a lot of those numbers up, but there's still one area where additional cores are needed to be taken, and we're talking to Josh from the county about that. One answer that was brought up by Mazingo. Mazingo was there too. Mark. One solution was to warranty it, extend the warranty on the paving to make sure that it's going to hold up, and then use the core samples as a guide to where we might need to go in and repair it if necessary. So that's where we are there.
How big an issue is that?
Well, it's big for them.
No, I understand that. But
not for us. I mean, if the county doesn't accept that paving, they'll have to go in and repave it, dig it up and pave it again.
Wow.
So it's not a lot. There's some areas there.
Is it just the area on Blue Lake Springs where A1A was done?
They haven't even done core.
They haven't done that area?
Disappointing on that. They haven't done the core samples on it. But there's a couple spots there, and
right.
There's some on Patricia. I don't know if you looked at
that.
Yeah,
I saw a few on Patricia.
There's some. There's some areas. Rainy Patricia.
So they haven't addressed the Lake Springs job yet.
And they haven't done the core samples yet. But they have. What he did do is go out, because Josh from the county has an issue with the. It's bumpy, right? The area that wasn't paved on the other side of the line It's old. I mean, it's pretty good shape, but it's, you drive that side and it's smoother than you, when you drive the paved side. It's bumpy, and there are specs on that. I think it's supposed to be an eighth of an inch. You put a straight edge on it, and it's supposed to be an eighth of an inch is all allowed to be a dip in there, right? So our geotech went out and did that, and he, you'll see if you drive it, he's sprayed white paint on the areas that failed that. So one solution to that is to grind it flatter, you know, so that even it out, so that we eliminate those little. It's kind of like a rippling thing.
You can feel it when you drive.
If you drive
it.
If
you drive
it
fast.
Blue Lake Springs.
Yeah. The only people that haven't been able to feel it is Mazingo. I don't know what that's all about.
Maybe they should adjust their shocks if they're trucks or something. So, but you can
heavier
feel it.
Trucks,
it's not, like Phil says, I know, it's kind of a joke, but Mark says it's because the way the paving was done, the width of the paving happens to be right in the wheels of a vehicle.
Right.
Well, what vehicle?
A truck.
I mean, suppose you have a little car. The wheels aren't going to be there. So, and you try it, it's bumpy, period. I mean, there's no two ways about it. So Josh says, from the county, says, I don't like this. It's supposed to be as good or better as what the original road was. So they're going to, one solution to that is to grind it. So we're working with them. And Josh from the county guy is amenable to working with us on this issue of compaction and the bumps.
And the option would be, instead of replacing the paving, to extend the warranty?
On the failures. Yeah. But backed up by the geotech saying, you know, in his opinion, that these lowered numbers, what he did was he took all the core samples, which changed the numbers of the compared to that test done at the time. So he went back, did core samples, that brought the numbers up. He averaged all the numbers out, and he came up with one spot. I think it's on. I don't know where it is. Shirley, Brown Shirley, somewhere. One spot that didn't average, he took an average of the numbers in it, and if you average them all out, I mean, it's kind of playing with numbers to me, but he seems to feel like this, it'll hold up. And if he backs it up and then Mazingo warranties it for an extra 2 years, I'm not a paving expert, so I don't know if 2 years is long enough, or, you know, is it going to fail in 10 years, is it going to... Sinking is the
problem.
Is the thing.
How long is a contract warranty right now without the extension?
1 year. But so they'll we'll have to address that. I mean, we'll have to make sure that they'll back it up. And that the geotech backs it up, too. I don't want to just take... Because after 4 years or five, what if it's, then we're going to be stuck with paving in it. We could be.
Geotech should be able to tell you what those issues, if they expect with that issue to come
exactly
up within 1, 2, 3, or whether it's a longer horizon stuff.
Right. So that's what we're trying. We think we're doing everything right here. We've got the geotech in here, working with the county guy.
Did the geotech say why they didn't take samples on Blue Lake
Springs? The core samples?
Yeah, the core samples. This week when they were out there.
I know, he didn't have the equipment with him. We thought that they were going to take them first before they went out did any other one. And it didn't happen, so I'm not sure why that happened, but they're going to get those.
So who's directing NV5? Is it John?
It's John Atkinson.
No, but who's...
Oh, John, yeah, he is.
Pedri is...
Okay. Well, he didn't know. When we talked to John Atkinson, the others, on Thursday, he said, what about Blue Lake Springs Drive? I don't see it on here. And he goes, well, we didn't do it yet. So John didn't even know that they didn't do it. I didn't either. So that's where we stand on that. We met with Mazingo down in Oakdale, John and I, and Mark Carey met with Jeff, Graham, and Phil. Phil is a Gian Fortone. Phil Gian Fortone is one of the senior people at Mazingo. So we went over the schedule to see if we could fit some of the extra projects in that we have. And so Brad from Mazingo is going to put out a new schedule next by Tuesday, I think, is what John told me. But
I don't believe it.
But we'll see. We're trying to fit in, well, we'll be talking about some of the extra projects that are here on the sheet here, but we'll see if we can fit them in by the end date of July 20th. Right now is the substantial completion, we feel, and then after that there'll be a little cleanup, probably, according to them.
So then maybe July 20th is substantial?
Well, that's what I'm... They just said July 20th is the day they're going to be... They plan to be done. And then, of course, you hear, well, there might be some minor cleanup after that. So that's...
I think that's based on them starting work on April 1st.
Yes, that's what... I was getting to that.
No, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Yeah, they want to start on April 1st, but we'll see how that goes. You know, but... Well, that's
Dave, what do they want to start on April 1st?
Yeah, they want to start on April 1st.
The construction of the back?
They start the other side, the pipe, laying the pipe.
Oh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's pretty much where we are now with the project.
Any questions or comments before we leave this? Meter installation.
Oh, as far as the meters go, we have, I don't know, Bill, you probably know more than I do, but how many meters are in by now?
Nothing's changed since...
Since the other...
Since the mainline stopped, yeah.
It looks like there's a stack of about 25 of them left. A
couple hundred.
Yeah, we
there's
have...
like 300 or 400 left.
Yeah. We still have, will that be the west side of...
Hydrants?
No,
meters.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope we don't have 400 more.
I know.
Yeah, no, the meters, we're the same as when the mainline stopped.
But how many, so you're probably going to address it. So the people who are on Julia, the first people who got the meters in, are there lined off?
Yeah, we cut and capped their pipe.
Okay.
Shannon and Julia.
So they're all on the
All in the new, except for one or two homes.
Okay, and then
the
next set, we gave them an extension.
We gave the main zone an extension of a month. How many people do you think are on the main zone still?
There's still six. It was 14 the other day.
There's six in the main zone that haven't been completed. They have till March 26th with the extension. Julie and Shannon's been cut off. There's three that did not make the connection at all, so they have no water until that's done. The next set was Marilyn, Dawn, and Helen. Their deadline was the 10th, a few days ago, and we still have nine there.
Did we extend theirs, too?
We haven't discussed the new time frame yet, but we will, because we still have nine.
So nine left. Uh-huh.
These are part-timers.
Right.
Some of them are full-timers, and that's an issue that we're going to have. Mm-hmm. I think some of these people really need to get certified letters, 48-hour
door hangers. Yeah, Billy talked about that, mm-hmm. We might have to talk to Andrew about how we do it with these new laws before we say we're shedding new law. We don't really know because some of them are.
The good news is a new law only applies to disconnects for non-payment. It doesn't have to do with other service disconnects, emergency disconnects, that sort of thing. But papering it is absolutely the right way to go. Repeated notices before the shutoff is the only thing you can do beyond sending somebody out and knocking on doors and trying to talk to somebody.
Okay.
And then what's the next
one? Yeah, we ran into that issue already.
No, I would knock on somebody's door.
Yeah.
They would collect a water bill.
Yeah.
Oh, not to collect, but to talk about the service.
Yeah, they show up and they didn't have any water, and we can turn their water back on because the pipe's disconnected,
and
I can't make the connection for them.
You talk about it.
So you get a heated, a verbal lashing. But we are going to have an issue. There's a few people that, small town, we know that are real known for suing companies, especially like school districts, and they have not made the connection, and we need to shut their water off. So I think we really need to address families like them.
And they are full-time.
They're full-time residents with kids. They make a living by suing people, so that's all they do.
Really?
Yep, and they just lost their last lawsuit against this school district here.
Oh.
So I know that they'll be ready to...
You're ready for another one?
Yeah.
It could be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Are they on any of these or on later
ones? Yeah, on the main zone. We've already given them a month extension, too.
Right.
I just talked to him. We were fixing a pipe, and he came by and started hovering over us, and I explained again. So, you know, need to hook up. It's not very hard. Just go to Ace Hardware and buy some parts if you can't afford a plumber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try to be real cordial and nice. And he just kind of gave you that look like, we'll see.
Yeah.
So
one thing we can do is we can schedule an executive session to talk about this, and we can talk about specifics in a confidential setting, talk about strategy. But you know, I don't know if that's something we do at the next meeting or if we need a special meeting to talk about strategy or something where... I can just work with staff to come up with something.
Okay.
I'm worried that weather's going to be brought up what Raymond's left within those last 2 weeks of my deadline, so now I need more time too. We've heard it before, so it's just something we kind of have to be prepared for.
Yeah,
I'll
have to come up with a solution.
But the next unit is all of Unit 3. They're April 23rd. And then after that is Unit 5, Unit 7, and theirs is May 3rd. And that's all we have. So that would be all of the one side that's complete. Actually, quite a bit has been done in Unit 7.
I worry about 3.
You do.
There's not a lot of people looking up on 3.
Is that Patricia?
It's like Rainy and Annalie area.
Oh,
and where Andy lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
People seem to just now be getting PRVs from them within this last week, and they're about a month away.
Well, the problem is not the street. The problem is the people in
the
house.
Right,
right.
I was just trying to figure out where it was.
Yeah.
It's just kind of the area. So that's where we're at. Main Hill is 6, Maryland Dining Hill is 9. Although we talked about if we had certain ones, was it Dean and Russell? If those were completely done, they could at least shut off part of the main zone. But unfortunately, these last few are on Dean. So they've still got 12 more days, so we'll just have to kind of wait and see what happens, I guess, with these last 6.
So we have full-time residents that have no water supply?
We have full-time residents that have not hooked up to the new yet.
They still have water until the
22nd. Oh, I got you. Okay.
Which is 12 days.
12 days away.
Yeah.
So how many?
Left in the main zone?
Yeah, how many?
Six.
Have not hooked up?
Six.
And the ones that are going to be up in 12 days.
And that is the absolute, this is already, these six have already had a 4-week extension from the original letter cutoff date.
So if we, do we have the power to hook them up and then charge them for it?
We don't go on their property.
We don't want them.
That's the main issue, is we don't have the right to go on their property without their permission. We could probably work something out, but there's a liability issue with doing that work and making it ours.
And none of these people have applied for financial aid.
No.
Have we made any loans? Any?
One.
One loan. But a lot of these, correct me if I'm wrong, Billy would know better, but these last 6, I believe, are the side-by-side. It's not the long trenchings from the back to the front. They're within 4 or 5 feet at the most.
Oh, wow.
And look, these plumbers doing these connections is anywhere from $200 to $350. It's not.
Yeah.
Which could be, I mean, a hard thing for some, but they're not the big connections.
What's the impact of the company if we give them another extension?
Keeping old main line hot. Right now, which I already know it has a leak or two, like in someone's driveway right now.
Yeah.
It's not bad, but if we keep letting it go, it could break at any moment. We're digging up somebody's driveway just to shut the pipe off.
It's stalling our
process,
too. You know, human nature is you give an extension, they'll take it.
Yeah.
And then they'll extend it again, and as long as we extend it, nothing will get done.
Yeah. Well, the more impact there is on us, giving them the extension, the easier it is to justify turning them off.
Absolutely.
So how much does it cost to do a court order, a specific performance? Does that cost a lot of money?
Yeah, what we would do is we'd go in and get an order for declaratory relief saying that we can do this. We have basically a free authorization to do it. cost significantly more than just connecting.
No, but we wouldn't be legal though.
Yeah, with the...
We wouldn't be breaking the law.
Right. So we'd be out for potentially, could take months. I don't know what the docket's like up in Calaveras County, but it could take months to get there.
And then...
thousands of dollars?
Can we charge them for the, in our contract? I mean, would they, I mean, if we tell them, say we said we're going to have to get a court order to do it, we think there's going to be a leak, which is going to cost thousands and thousands of dollars
yeah.
if they don't do it.
And the maintenance of the old pipe, too.
And the maintenance mm-hmm. of the old pipe, so for $300, you're off the hook, you know.
Yeah, we could make that threat, especially as to the court fees. The bylaws on what you can charge people individually is fairly broad. It's been written fairly broad for that reason.
Well, I mean,
it's a little hard to charge them for the leak and for other things that are sort of born of the system.
So is there
things that can be individually traced to them, that's a better argument.
Well, so I think if we have a leak on that back line, and it's because they haven't hooked up, you know, need to do maintenance on that line. It seems like, is there, I don't know if there's a way that we could quantify it and charge them for it, those six homeowners or something.
Yeah.
But it's, so we haven't talked to them directly, or we have?
We have just through letters and emails.
We have.
But I mean, when they, do they answer the emails?
No.
What, isn't somebody calling them?
So we've sent the original letter letting them know it's time to hook up, you have 6 months. We sent a reminder a month before saying you have 1 month left. We sent another letter at 2 weeks and also called it 2 weeks. And then we sent another letter letting them know, because you haven't hooked up, we need you to hook up, but here's another 4 weeks. So they've had 6 different correspondence, whether it be phone, email, or letters. And then we're going to start making those phone calls again on Monday to these last 6. As well as certified letters. So that'll be 8 points of correspondence contact before their shows.
Well,
when you call them, are people answering the phone?
Yeah,
you are calling
some,
yeah. In some cases.
And most of the time when we've called in the past, they have said, I know we're working on it, we're getting right on it, and they usually call within a day or two of that, we see the plumber coming and it's getting done. So the phone calls have been very effective. It's these last 6, like Billy's saying, that are kind of stubborn, that are kind of like, what are you going to do? We'll see, you know.
So. But there's, it sounds like there's just one that's really confrontational.
The one that I'm worried about, yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them are part-timers, some are full-timers, but there's one.
There's the one that he's talking about. There's another one that I've dealt with, and we've had issues in the past as far as money goes. And they've claimed that they can't do it because they want to make it a part of redoing their entire yard and like landscaping and do it all in one. So they're kind of using that. But as far as the 6, those are the 2 that have really kind of pushed back.
I think it's time to look at legal remedy. If we are not... Or if our right-of-way access ends at some place on the property and we have to get a legal court order to go further, we ought to do that.
Yeah.
We're only dealing with the exception here. It's only 2 or 3 cases, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I'll work with staff on that. The easiest path is, unfortunately, the shutoff. It would be an easier path forward than getting an order allowing us to go on the property and do the work ourselves. We could try to get permission from the landowner. As the last best offer, we could try to get permission from the landowner to go on, do the work, and send them the bill, and then it just becomes an issue of not having that bill paid someday if they continue to refuse to. That's probably the best path forward.
For that,
we want to do it ourselves, or
maybe
to get their permission to
sub it out.
To a plumber, and then there's a bill from them.
But do we have to get verbal, or can we have to have written?
I would say written.
Yes.
Get a written permission saying, you have permission to go on the property, you have permission to do this work, I accept responsibility for everything once the ground gets covered up and done, just as all the other landowners do. And if we can get them to do that, which is difficult given that they don't want to go ahead and do the work themselves, but maybe signing a piece of paper is easier.
So if they agree to that, then why won't they agree to just calling a plumber and making it a plumber?
ones, because we're the ones now. The water company is putting the bill.
Yeah, and they're just not going to pay.
Yeah. And they'll just decide not.
Does every organization that deals in any kind of commodities, regardless of what it's known as, has to deal with 1%?
And
out of 2,034, whatever the managed number of customers have, there's at least four or five that just don't want to go along with the program. So if we have to seek a quarter to do it, I think we should. The rules are changing or have changed because of state law when it comes to shutting people's water off now. They're entitled to a hearing. They're entitled to more due process. I don't want to put us into that realm by trying to do the right thing, where we install it and then they don't pay us. Now we're going to shut the water off and we have to go through a separate process again. So I'll lean on you a little bit to come up. I'm sure this has come up somewhere in the water world. It just has to be.
Yes.
And whatever documents are tendered to the customer, the homeowner, we create. They sign on our documents that we're going to do the work, that they're going to pay for it. Tell them right in the document what it's going to cost. I assume we can do that. We get the plumber, or we use our own staff, and they pay accordingly. And get this thing moving.
If we shut them off, they're going to hook up. So if we can legally shut them off, I'll go to their house, we'll talk to them, whatever. I'll go to their house, I'll say, look, we're going to have to shut you off. So if we can do that, that'll make them do it. They'll do it.
And there's two different paths there. Do we want to go with the shut-off route right away and then try to facilitate them getting it done as fast as possible and they're done, or do we want to go the route where we are offering to sub out the work and send them the bill? We could do both.
Well, it's a variation of the second one. What we're doing is personal appearance from one of the staff here is trying to get them to move off-center and get the and take care of business. Either they take care of business or we're going to do it for them.
Do you know these people? Anybody know them personally?
Not personally, no.
I mean, their kids go to the same school as your kids? Or
no. With these six, we're going to see this more and more. We're just coming to our first real shutdown, and we're going to continue to have this issue, and most likely.
So you have their, the best way to get their attention is to shut the water off.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's
Yep.
They'll hook up. I guarantee you probably they will. But, Andrew, I'd like to ask you, if there is a full-time person there with kids and everything, mm-hmm. are they going to be able to say that we're causing them harm by shutting the water off to a family that has to have water for living?
Especially in the environment.
That's the thing. I really don't like shutting water off to people, but, you know, and there's some people.
What's PG&E going to do? They're another utility like
right.
that.
Right.
Oh, they're don't pay your bill, down. That's okay, we'll keep the power on? I don't think so.
No, and they're shutting
down. They're cutting it off the state.
The power company will cut it off after a certain period of time.
Yeah.
But they give you, like, warnings.
But they won't call you. Right. At least it's...
Well, you get
an answer. They're a shareholder, right? So, yeah, I would... say you cut it off and wait for the phone call, and then...
I'm not opposed to talking to them and saying, look, man, we're going to have to shut this off.
Well, I mean...
So what, we can offer them a loan, you know, if you can't afford it, we can...
If you know them, I mean, if you know who they are, I mean...
Well,
I mean, there's guys in Costco buying all water and may not work.
Well, good thing they bought water.
The health issue is people can say anything they want, and they can run the court for anything they want in California.
Right.
That's just the way it goes. The question will be whether the water company bears any bad consequences as a result. And the key is, did you listen to them? Did you talk to them? Did you give them 8 points of contact? Which is, frankly, extreme. That's okay. It's okay to be on the extreme side of notice.
They're not going to take, I mean, they're going to start out with us being guilty. So we have to prove our innocence.
Correct.
You know,
have a written paper trail of notice.
We've had a couple of challenges in the past. As long as we can show due process, and we will.
Okay.
We're fine.
Yeah.
And to that end, Dave, you and Andrew will work on this matter.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do the knock and talk.
Yeah, I'll do that.
That's what you're offering
to
do.
Out.
here's, you know, here's a letter.
3-day notice, that sort of thing. Probably the stuff you were already going to do, but... Well, we whatever, do a public notice?
You guys, if you...
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, public notice.
I was just going to ask if we could put out a sign by our USDA sign.
Let's try and stay on this thing. Dave and Andrew work out the details as far as covering all the legal matters. Billy and you and Dave can work out a process of doing a knock and talk. That'll be the first level. And we'll go to the notice and then the shut off as appropriate. PG&E sent you a letter that's color-coded red. The envelope is red. The interior of the letter is red. And it says, as of this date, none of the light bulbs will work. Very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anna has a question if she could. Are we talking about this legal action for only full-time?
No, it's any customer.
So then we would need to go back if we revise the plan when we follow through with it, then we need to go back and do the same thing for those three on Julia and Shannon.
What we're going to do is we're going to apply the same due process to everyone.
Okay.
Now it's easier if it's full time because maybe they answer the door.
Right. I just wanted to know if it's full time.
Yeah, and when it gets down to sending them letters of demand or requirements, we do a register certified. They probably won't accept it anyway,
right.
Which is a code. Okay. Anything else on this? Okay. Anything else, Dave?
No, except for the fact that we are lucky, I think, because the weather has allowed us, all the contractors, the plumbers, to be working and hooking these people up. You know, if we had a bunch of snow here for February and January and, you know, we wouldn't have the amount of people hooked up that we have. So we kind of, you know, looking at, last year I was looking at it thinking, wow, we're going to have to extend these because it's going to be heavy-duty winter for a while, but we haven't had that. So I kind of think that we're doing pretty well as far as the amount of people that we have already connected. That's the only thing there.
And we're only going to do this once. Until another 112 years go by. 112, you think? You said 120, I think. The spikes are going to last. I remember that. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Long range plan. Good morning.
All right, I guess I'm up, huh?
Hey, good morning. How are you doing? Hey, did they cancel all the spring ball?
They did. I was had tickets to yesterday's game, and cool. So I only was able to go to one before they canceled it. And
naturally.
Yesterday's game would have been pretty rainy anyway, so
yeah.
At least this way I get my tickets refunded. But, yeah, it's a huge deal. A lot of people down here that are pretty disappointed, but that's the way it is.
That's right.
Anyway, we'll get into the long-range planning. I think the first chart that I'll talk to is on page 25 of the package. Where we stand budget-wise on with Mazingo, MC Engineering, and our co-bank loan. After I submitted the charts, there were some revisions that came in, and I'll just have to verbalize those. I can update the chart and resend it, and I'll have Lee or somebody resend out the update. But so for Mazingo, just through the latest MC Engineering monthly report, I noticed that change order 13 was approved. So up there it says including change orders 1 through 12. So 13 was approved. For $18,837, and it's kind of two parts. One is putting the concrete walkway around the booster station for $4,930, and the second was the relocation of the Maryland TRV to the north side of the intersection for $13,907. So that increased their contract budget to $8,560 and 560, 85, 60, 250. So then they also had progress payment 16 that was identified that came in. I haven't seen it yet, but that was in an amount of $90,190. So that increases their cum actuals through February, $6,856,752, leaving a budget remaining of $1,703,498. So, as it mentions in the notes there, there were no payment requests in December and January, so this progress payment 16 was the first one in quite a while where Mazinga was requesting money. So including retainage, Mazinga, their spending level is at 84% of their contract value. The new scope tasks that are mentioned there, the A1A is basically complete, as well as the sample stations. And those were included in the change orders mentioned above. So the potential change orders there. So I mentioned change order 13 was approved. So it's showing there the potential 2020 change orders at $572,349. With those ones that were just approved, that reduces that down to $553,512. And estimating the remaining unknown change orders at 3% for another $43,000. So in total, the potential change orders is at around $596,000. Yeah, looking at MC Engineering, it's showing their contract budget has not changed yet until we decide on Amendment 6. So it's at $1,843,429. Their cum actuals, they had an invoice that came in after I sent them the chart. So their latest bill was $21,348. So their cum actual is now at $1,810,758. And contract budget remaining, including additional services and contingencies, right around $33,000. Amendment 6 was received on February 4th. It includes new scope for phase one engineering, surveying, and inspection at around $52,000, and a 6-month schedule extension through July of $162,400, totaling the 214.4. So through January, on the additional scope section, they had spent just under $50,000. So pretty much had completed most of that work that they were quoting in Amendment 6. And there's some other potential additional scope that I'll get into, and that value change, the 43, is a different value that I'll mention on some upcoming pages here. The CoBank, another statement came in that was dated February 28th, so we need to pay that in March. And the loan amount did not change, but we received additional interest of $21,831. So the loan amount, as you see on this page, is the same, but the actual interest to date increased to $205,648. we're showing the estimated interest through August just to be safe. And so that remaining interest is about $167,000. Total interest, if it does go all the way through August, is estimated at $373,000. Any questions?
Any questions of the board? Go ahead, John.
All right. So if we get into the next page, this is some analysis that we put together just based on all the latest information. You know, getting through Amendment 6 with MC Engineering, getting all of our questions answered and you know, reconciling all the values and everything. At the top, you can see the USDA funding, $12,225,744, and it shows the contract values for Mazingo and MC Engineering there. The Mazingo contract value, as I mentioned on the prior page, is now $8,560,250. So that's gone up based on change order 13. But below that, all these items reflect all the currently ongoing change orders that are in process and all the change orders that are pending or planned, so that we can estimate as best we can all the
Hello?
It went out. Oh, it went out.
The phone went out?
Yeah, you'll have to. We told them it might
let's
happen.
Let's take a break until it's.
Hey, you guys.
Sarah,
will you stop the recording?
Sure.
Are you done?
Sure. Are they being more responsive?
Yes.
So, we put together these next two pages based on all the current change orders that are going on, the pending ones and future change orders that are known, so that we could get the full picture of the costs ahead of us and how those relate to our total funding and whether or not we have enough funding to handle all of this or just what items we can plan on moving forward with within the funding levels. So the first couple in the additional change orders listed there are Amendment 6 for MC Engineering. So the 6-month extension for the $162,000 and the $52,000 for the new scope work that they're doing, which is the $52,000. That scope is pretty much complete already. In Amendment 6, they also identified other extra scope projects that were not included as part of that quote. They estimated through iterations that Sharon and I went through with them, boiled down to $32,594. It includes the project showing there on the right. As I talk through this, the first project there, A1B, is at this point it's probably one that we don't feel that we'll have the funding to do within the contract, so might have to put that on a back burner and cover that as we move forward through our asset management plan or funding in the next couple years. So then we get down into the next couple blocks there. Change order 13. I mentioned previously that those recently got approved, so they're not future change orders anymore. They're part of Mazingo's contract. The dollar values stayed the same. We get into change order 14. Those are some potential ones that we want to get approved, get the go ahead for MC Engineering and Mazingo to move forward on those. They'd like to start those as soon as possible. I believe a large part of that is because of the location of that work, where Mazingo is currently performing other work, so it would fit in nicely. So you can see the values there, 39.2 for the six gate valves, and just over $4,000 for the Omni master meters. The MC amounts are part of that 32,594 shown above. Then we get into other change orders that MC Engineering and Mazingo are showing in their change order log. And you see down toward the bottom, A1B and A1C new scope items. And I've got the comment on the right for A1B. It doesn't look like we'll be able to fund that within our USDA funding limit. So that one we're probably going to recommend gets set aside until maybe toward the end of the project. We'll find out we do have enough, but at this point we don't think we do. A1C, we would like to include that as part of what we're recommending we go forward with, and I'll explain that a little more on the next chart. So if we move to page 27, some of the other additional new scope items are the Wawona, Boro Court, and Del Rio. You can see those listed there. Those are all areas that they'd, I know Wawona, they'd like to start by toward the end of this month. You can see the dollar values there as areas that we think would be higher priorities than, for instance, doing the A1B project. Some other areas that are on the radar is that were brought up. Well, this is an area that apparently John has dollars left over from another change order to purchase and install some risers on hydrants in Unit 13. This came up in the last construction meeting, estimated at about $15,000. And I don't know, Dave, if you've heard any more, if there's been any more discussion on that between you and John.
I think that number is
them having the dollars to cover that.
You know, I talked to John on Wednesday, and I asked him how much money they had left in that one change order, and he's like, without going back and looking at quantities, he still felt very confident that they had enough risers to cover it in that existing change order. Because they only put four in, he thought, on Russell Drive. So that would give them, I think we authorized 20. So, and they probably don't need 15 of them in this scope, but we don't know. So.
Okay. All right. Then they also talked about, during that construction meeting, Cypress Point extension of the water line, about 250 feet. So according to John's latest information, that's something they would like to get started in May. The services are already in Mazingo's scope. So this is the cost of just putting in that new water, the line. Next area there that's a potential cost are the county issues. We talked about some repaving that may need to be done, and also some possible improvements to the road leading up to the spoil site on Dunbar Road. So the best estimate they have right now that John's put forward is the $90,000. Then I've estimated 3% remaining change orders that are just future potential change orders unknown at this time. So I got a plug in there of $43,000. Below that table, you see all the additional reimbursements that we can claim. So we've got all the purchases that we've made for meters, transmitters, PRBs, sample stations and Omni meters. The co-bank interest estimated through August 2020. So that total, subtotal is $929,000. So with everything up there in the table and all the reimbursements combined, that would, without including A1B in there, would be would come to $12,204,000. So that would leave very little, around $21,000 of our total USDA funding. So so the box at the bottom of the page, if we do everything up there, with the exception of, as I mentioned, A1B, and without the cost of A1C, Wawona, and Boro Court, and Del Rio, we would have $377,000 left over. So, you know, that's a fairly comfortable dollar amount. So, our recommendation is that we move forward with all that. And then these additional tasks, we kind of address them individually as we go, as far as TAP A1C, Del Rio, Boro, and Wawona. And you can see in that little table at the bottom how much the funding balance would be as we do each one based on the estimate. You can also see on the right there the estimated completion dates if those extra scope items are completed or included. So I think it was mentioned substantial completion is now showing June 20th. So if we include A1C, it would probably take us out to July 22nd, and then if we include those others, Del Rio, Boro Court, it would probably take us out to August 12th. That's our best estimates at this point, based on the extra days that they've estimated.
So the recommendation right now before the board is to go with these four items, correct?
Actually, I'd like to cut in, if I may.
Yeah, please.
So after Tom did this great table, and on Tuesday, Mazingo and MCE met with Dave, and they had a different table that had a couple of other items on it that I think we should just throw in there.
Okay.
I think the water company themselves or Dave himself could just approve these change orders, but I think we should just be aware of what they are. There's two or three regulators in Unit 13,
three
that need to be removed.
They say two, but there needs to be three.
And that is probably about, right here it says it's 5,000, but it's more like 7,500 for Mazingo to remove those three regulators. And then there's also on the bottom of the change order table that they sent me on Thursday, there's a $9,000 change order for additional time and material for to daylight PRV vault drains. And I think that they've talked about it during construction meetings that I hadn't heard it, because maybe when they're talking about it, I can't hear those people. They're still in the room. So So that's about $16,000, $17,000 that wasn't on Tom's list, but I think we should be aware of it, that they're probably going to go through and go through really quickly. Because they're in Unit 13, so those regulators need to come out now while they're in there. And that's my opinion. You know, you guys can discuss it, and I'm sorry to short-circuit you, Tom.
Actually, I had a note about that. I noticed that as far as removing the regulators, and John had it as his priority four, if I understood his spreadsheet correctly. So, you know, the 43,000 that I had there for future change orders, I think, you know, those are the kinds of things that still could come up in the last couple months here as part of that 43. I think they do need to be included in this discussion, and
everything
I think. I think, Dave, you probably agree that you know, that's one that definitely needs to be included.
Yes.
Tom, everything that's being recommended by LRPC is within the scope of the loan, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, well, the loan's already been approved by the board. There'll be no separate board action necessary here.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, we're not asking for
when I get into Amendment 6 status in the next few pages, you know, I provided all this information to the Long Range Committee and, you know, explained as best I could how it affects our funding. And so in a couple pages, I have a bullet that the Long Range Planning Committee recommendation to the board was to approve Amendment 6 for MC Engineering and authorize MC Engineering to go forward with the new scope tasks that are listed in this table, with the exception of A1C. They would need to come back and receive concurrence from us and the board prior to moving forward on A1C.
Okay. You're talking about the numbers as you show on page 30, correct?
Correct.
Okay. The LRPC recommendation of the Board of Directors approve the amendment, authorize MC Engineering to proceed forward the completion of the scopes, et cetera. Request MC Engineering obtain firm quotes to complete. I don't know if they can do that within that. Never mind.
And also to hold off on task A1B.
Right.
That's in the above bullet that we don't even want to.
Okay, but all of the funding for this is already been included. We've already approved funding for everything.
Yeah. We have the funding. It's just, I think with MC's amendment, well, it'll just come out of the funding, but I think we want the board to be cognizant of what projects we're looking at doing and probably authorizing.
Okay, the board recognizes that there's some adjustments along the way.
Okay.
Okay, change orders are an example of that. Okay, so long as they're still within the 12.3, et cetera, the board doesn't have to take action on any of its payments.
Right. That's correct.
Okay.
The board does have to approve the amendment, right?
I think we have to approve MC's amendment, which is Amendment 6. I think that was one of the things.
Because it's a contract.
Right.
Extension of the contract.
With additional monies?
Additional monies, but that will come out of the loan.
Yes.
Eventually.
Okay, so the first matter has to do with funding. The funding picture is not changed. We're still within the scope of the loan.
Yes.
Okay. So the recommendation of the board is to approve Amendment 6.
Yes.
That's a change order.
With our existing contract with MC. They don't call them change orders with an engineering
firm.
Right.
Oh, okay.
They're
change orders. Yeah,
it's a difference in terms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think last year when we did Amendment 4 or 5, we had to get board approval.
Yes.
And that's a good point. That typically with the contractor's work, change order work, that is delegated to whoever within the water company is running the project, Dave in this case, to approve those changes subject to board review. With the contract amendment with MC, that is typically something that comes back to the board, unless it's been expressly given to somebody else like Dave to approve it, which I don't think it has in this case.
Yeah. Okay. Does everyone have the recommendations in front of them? It's on page 30. There are three of them. Approve the amendment to authorize, et cetera. Request and firm quotes. I'll take a motion to approve Long Range Planning Commission's recommendation as shown.
I'll so move. Or
I'll second it.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no.
Aye.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, the one item I'll mention that is still may not be approved by the USDA. Dave John brought this up to me when we were there for that last construction meeting. The purchase of the PRVs, $84,000. So if you find out any more on that, let me know. But apparently, because we didn't put it out for bid to get multiple quotes, we may not be able to get reimbursed for that.
Yeah, well, I still think we can. I mean, I think we ought to go back and talk to Mike Strinsky on that, because on our meters, we didn't have to, we still sourced those because we already had census meters in our system already. So we were allowed to ask for reimbursement on those. Now the regulators, it's true that we didn't go out and try and get cheaper regulators, but all of our regulators currently in the system are Wilkins regulators that we've always had. That's one point that we can make to him. And also another point is that I did go to Ferguson and I did get a discount from them on a quantity of the regulators. So we do have some arguing points. We might be able to still get some reimbursement for those.
So did you, when the original set was purchased, did that go out on bid?
The point is that Wilkins does not have an exclusive distribution agreement with Ferguson, and you had several other sources that you could have gotten prices from.
Right.
That would be their point.
So,
yeah, but the original, who did the original bid when you first bought the first set? You said you already had them in place.
Mm-hmm.
Did that go out on bid at that time?
No, that was in-house construction. Those were prior projects.
So we didn't do a bid?
No.
No.
But they'll let us reimburse ourselves for the meters.
Right.
Because we already had them in the ground.
Because they were already installed, and that's what we always use. I mean, it's an argument we might be able to make.
It's an argument worth putting forth.
Well, that's exactly what I'm going to try and do.
Well, let's do that rather than guess at it. Okay.
You know, you've got a relationship with Ferguson, blah, blah, blah. You know, they're
quiet. Yeah, but it's not their rule. We pitch on the fact that it makes sense. It's contiguous what we've already done. Product's the same, you know.
Right.
Sometimes all that knowledge and good thinking gets lost for the rule of the bid. And we're not required to get bids. Well, with something like this, we'd have to. I think they'll approve it.
Do you ever get to talk to?
I can.
I think you should, because I think the person who's doing the talking would rather keep the money for future change orders.
Okay.
It's worth you having this conversation.
I certainly could do that, and I will do that.
Okay, you got it.
Got it.
Okay.
An $84,000 conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's only so much that you
Yeah, I want to make sure that we don't risk our reimbursements.
No.
You know, we've been counting on these reimbursements through the whole project, and I want to reiterate what Sharon's mentioning, and I want to make sure that that we don't lose track of these reimbursements and fund them with other change orders.
Yeah,
so.
Well, also the it's a loan, you know, and we're paying back the loan. The amount of the regulators, the monetary amount, is going to be covered in the loan. We're paying it back,
right.
So it's not like I don't know. I just think we have an argument there.
Let's pursue it, because we're guessing at it. Okay.
All right. Well, I'll move forward. We don't probably really need to talk too much about Amendment 6 status update. You know, I'll just mention on page 29, you know, we went through several iterations of this over an extended period of time. And, you know, initially back in October of last year, we received the initial proposal. Then we went through a revision in January, January 7th, the middle. And then we got another revised proposal on the 22nd. So through all those efforts finally getting the information we needed to make decisions, we arrived at the 214,372 proposed amount. But you can see there that the total reduction from the initial proposal was a little over $22,000. So based on all that fact-finding, we were able to nail it down to what we feel was reasonable. So on page 30, we pretty much went through all that. So I think that's all been agreed upon.
Yeah.
So we'll go into the asset management plan status.
Go ahead.
So page 32, based on a letter from MC Engineering dated the 20th, we received the final draft revision of the asset management plan. Responses to our questions, comments, and all the errors and omissions that we saw in the previous submittals. We also received a soft copy on January 23rd of the asset database Excel files that we hadn't received yet. So based on, if you go through the text in the asset management plan, there's several areas that the asset management plan makes recommendations that they feel should be followed. So when I was up there a few weeks ago, sat down with Sharon, Dave, and Billy, and we went through those areas. So I just kind of showed them here the areas that we discussed. So that first area talks, you know, about all the operations manuals, the records, sampling results, policies and ordinances that we need to follow, preserving the memory of the water system with the appropriate record keeping. And the last item there was the GIS-based mapping system. So you see the check marks next to A through E. So as we went through that, our systems that we have set up meet all those recommendations. As far as F goes, I'll talk about that a little bit more on the upcoming chart, but based on what the asset management plan recommended in that area, we did not feel, Dave and Billy did not feel that was applicable to the way we operate. The next item, table three, we went through all the recommended levels of service goals, performance targets, and compliance criteria, and we felt that we met all those requirements. Page 33, we reviewed the maintenance requirements and standard procedures, which include the recommended daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, biannually, annually, and as-needed maintenance practices, and we went through every one of those, and we felt that we met all of those. Item four there, the GIS mapping with pipeline identification. They recommended that we utilize the GIS shape files that were developed as part of the asset management plan to implement an interactive GIS mapping asset management and database program. So, and Dave and Billy, just correct me if any of this isn't accurate, but the response that I heard from Dave and Billy was that what they were recommending is not really applicable to the way we operate and monitor our system, that it's basically overkill. We plan to utilize as-built and maps that are contract deliverables for accurate location of our assets. All our repairs and replacements and new assets will be logged per the processes that we currently use. These will be reviewed and provided on a quarterly basis. So basically, on a quarterly basis, I see this as sitting down with Dave and Billy, going through any updates that need to be included within the asset management database. Then on an annual basis, based on all those quarterly updates, appendices B1 and B2 will all be updated and recalculated to show the asset values that are estimated per year. So rather than have a GIS system that probably would be difficult and burdensome for our level that we need, we would do it through this quarterly process of updates, then on an annual basis, making sure all that gets updated within the appendices, and that, based on all the formulas in the appendices, will then reflect the forecast of asset requirements for repairs and replacements in the future. Does that follow our discussion, Dave and Billy?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's pretty clear what we need, what we don't.
Yeah. It's, if you read into the costs involved in that GIS system that they were encouraging us to go move forward with, it was costly and probably would be a little difficult for our crews to maintain. So we feel this process should work. Number five.
So
there.
What? How much was the cost?
They didn't really say, but there was several, the cost of the software that you need to purchase, and then I don't have it in front of me, but just the different things that they mentioned within their write-up. I don't know what the dollar amount was, but it's.
Yeah, I think it was $40,000 or $50,000 to get it started, and then there was a subscription cost of like $1,200 a year to do the maintenance through Esri. So they said they could make it more financially viable, but it's still pretty expensive.
For something we don't need.
I just worry that sometime in the future, we might want a digital model of the system.
Well, we are, all the work they did on that, we're going to get. And we'll have it. It's just that we won't, we'll have it ready in case the in the future people want to implement it. Well, they'll be able to do that. But for us...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think we spent a lot of money up front where they went out and did all the GIS mapping.
I agree with you on that.
But we're going to get the shape files electronically,
yeah.
And we're going to we're asking them, or we're going to ask them to print, you know, the whole project plans plus the old work, because they put all the old lines in order to do the modeling. Mm-hmm. So they have all that in the GIS.
So you print it right out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can print it all out for us and give us a CD of like everything, or upload it to the cloud so we have it. So.
Okay.
So, item five there, we reviewed and discussed table 7, which is the predictive, preventive, and emergency maintenance inventory, an annual, kind of an annual budget estimate. So we talked through that, and so that's one area that we still need to work. It's in process. Billy's going to be reviewing the items, quantities that we would need to keep in stock, and the cost, what our history shows of all these parts, so that we can validate that table and update it as necessary to make sure it's accurate with the way we see it.
Tom, did you get my markup?
No.
That's why.
No.
No, Billy's working on that. On that, that this is about the soft cost of 30%. Billy went in and...
No.
Remember we talked about the 30% soft cost?
Yeah, that's coming up, Dave.
Yeah. Okay. So Billy worked on that already, too.
Okay.
So the table that's here, is this the same table that was here in, for the January meeting, or has it been updated?
Mm-hmm. The table that I have in my chart?
Yeah.
The
asset manager table.
Yeah, it's been updated, but I'll talk through that in a minute.
Okay.
So just finishing up these different areas that I discussed with Dave and Billy. So Billy's, they're working on table 7 for an update there to make sure it accurately reflects the way we do business. Table 8, in table 8, it shows, the cost of system improvements in years 0 through 10. So in there, in this latest version, it shows new scope task A1B, A1C, Unit 13 valves, Boyle Court, Del Rio, and Wawona. So as we talked about earlier, all of those except A1B we're planning on doing within the USDA scope. So those need to be removed from the asset management plan because they'll already be completed. So that needs to occur. So that's something that should be removed from table 8. The last item there, number 7, discussed the soft cost. Dave just brought that up. The tables, all the tables 8 through 11 and appendices B1 and B2, I mentioned to MC Engineering when they submitted their last version of the tables that I didn't feel that the 30% soft cost should be applied to every asset in those databases. There's a lot of items in there that don't require engineering and contingency. So Dave and Billy and I discussed this, and it sounds like Billy's going through the process of looking at those. What I'd like to do is make sure that, you know, because it amounts to over $13 million of soft costs if you look out through the 90 years worth of repairs and replacements. So there's a large majority of those that either don't require any soft costs or the soft costs could be greatly reduced. So I want to go through that process of reviewing all those and make a determination so that we're not applying a whole bunch of extra burden on our asset management requirements in the future. So that's so Dave, you mentioned that Billy's already started that.
Yeah, I think he
I already finished it.
Okay, I haven't seen anything.
Well, yet, so. Right, but yeah, he is working. He worked on that. It's just marked up in the plan, so I'll have to get that to you.
Okay. So if we look at page 35, this represents the latest revision that we received from MC Engineering. On the top there, the 434-294, I just talked about that. Much of that are items that we're going to be completing within the USDA project. So that dollar amount, if we just left A1B in there, would be around $125,000. So just overall, there were a lot of changes that were made. So in January, what we asked them to do is go back and validate the tables against the appendices because we were seeing some inconsistencies, and so they prepared this revision, came back, and in page 35 and 36 you'll see a bunch of cells that I highlighted in blue, and hopefully they're showing up that way in your charts, but those areas, they either increased substantially from the last input, or they're totally new figures that were never in there. One of the, I know in the water meter column that those differences were based on the fact that they only showed replacing the meters one time over the 90-year period. And so we mentioned to them that, you know, if they have an 18 to 20-year lifespan or whatever it is, you need to show, you know, the recurring replacements of the meters. So I understand in the water meter column why it increased. But in some of these other cells, you know, from the time that we pointed out that they need to go back and reconcile some of the values in these tables, if I look at all those areas highlighted in blue and the new values that are in this revised spreadsheet for tables 8 through 11, their values went up almost $8 million. So in 1 month's time, by them redoing the tables, I don't know what changed to make it go up by $8 million. So I'm going to look at each one of those highlighted blue cells and see if I can figure out why those values increase so much, and what repairs or replacements they're talking about that got added in over this last month. Another. On one of the areas that we talked about with Dave and Billy was also, if you look at the year 2040, I've got a yellow highlight there. So in the write-up of the asset management plan, it talks about the fact that Unit 13, the Cypress Point area, water distribution system will needs to be updated. So in the write-up, they mentioned that it it should be done in the next 15 to 20 years. 20 years would be 2040. So, and Billy, I think, concurred that he feels that it should probably be done within the next 15 years or so. Well, they don't show it until, on page 36, they don't show it until out in the year 2061. So, another area that needs to be corrected. So in this revision, I also noticed that tables 8 through 11 did not match up with appendices B1 and B2. So I brought that up to MC Engineering over the last week, and they mentioned, I've got a note down toward the bottom of page 36. I show the differences between B1 and B2 and the tables 8 through 11, and you can see there that it's a $7.6 million difference. And I asked about that to MC Engineering, and that they mentioned that that's because the appendices B2 only takes into account the single cost for the useful life of the appurtenances. So in B2, they're not accounting for recurring replacements of any of the assets. And I told them that B1 and B2 need to agree with tables 8 through 11. You shouldn't be evaluating the replacements differently between the tables and the appendices. So they took the spreadsheet, and they asked me for the spreadsheet that I was using to make sure that it was the last spreadsheet that they provided to me. So I sent that to Jose yesterday, and Dave, I'd like you to talk to them to make sure that they understand. I wrote four basic questions to them on the 12th of areas within the spreadsheet, the tables and the appendices that need to be reviewed, and we need to come to a common agreement on these. So that I can, fully analyze all the data, reconcile it, and make sure that we're using the best estimates possible as we develop, this into what we feel the asset, the financial needs are over the next many years for all the asset management repairs and replacements.
Okay.
We don't get good database,
yeah,
with the right values in there, this is useless.
Okay, I will.
I mean, you saw my question.
Yeah, I've been talking to him, Mark. And you've been talking to him, I've been talking to him, so we'll get it done.
Yeah, so hopefully we can get the right values in the appendices that match the tables. We'll get the... make sure that we come to a common understanding on the 30% soft costs, and make sure that the Cypress Point area gets into the correct year and things like that, so that I can really start analyzing this data and come up with some recommended options for how we go about funding the asset management plan over the next many years. That's an ongoing process, and hopefully we can get that all resolved in the next week or so, and
yes,
so we can move
yes
forward.
Right. We will.
Any other questions on that before I leave it?
Any questions from the board?
My plan is to make sure we get good, solid data there. Then I'm going to start working, analyzing it and coming up with some options on how we move forward with that and bring it forward to the long-range planning committee. And hopefully, by our May meeting, we should have some pretty good information to discuss as far as what we see as viable options for moving forward with funding this.
Okay. I'm sure glad you're on our side.
The last chart, page 37, on January 20th, based on discussions that we had in our January board meeting, we sent a letter to MC Engineering expressing concerns that we had with project status, receiving information that we had requested on Amendment 6 and the asset management plan, et cetera, et cetera. And we requested a corrective action plan. On January 24th, they submitted a response back to us and provided written responses to the questions and concerns and updates for Amendment 6 and asset management plan that we had previously requested. So they finally responded to those. You can see there that they also, as part of that, they addressed the corrective action plan. And you can see there the types of things that they put into that. I guess, Dave and Sharon, do you see them meeting those correction or the corrective action plan areas there that they said that they would make sure to follow from now on? Do you see them following those?
When they want to.
Yeah.
I asked John repeatedly that I wanted the logs and the punch list at the meetings and sent out to the people who were not in attendance. And, you know, I'm sure he doesn't really think that's particularly important. I think it was at the meeting, but it wasn't sent to me. So when I was here a couple of weeks ago, he did want to meet with me before the meeting, so I didn't throw him under the bus, I think, with Mazingo.
Well, it's nice to know that he remembers who the customer is.
He remembered when I was here in person. He forgot when I was on the phone. So,
Dave, I would request that you you review these with John, and just if there are certain areas of this that they aren't living up to, we need to bring it to their attention.
Right.
So, as far as their responsiveness since then, I think their responsiveness has been pretty good. I think for the most part, they're responding to all of our requests in a pretty timely manner. But as you can see just from the tables that I just went through on the asset management plan, their accuracy still needs improvement. You know, they provide inputs to you, and you know, like all those changes in the latest tables and appendices, they didn't even explain to me when they provided it to us that there were $8 million worth of changes. So I have to go through all the tables and figure it out for myself that a whole bunch of changes were made and not even mentioned to us. So those types of things, I think we should bring to their attention that they still need improvement on. And so they're working on all these things as far as the asset management plan goes, and hopefully in the next week here we'll get all that resolved. But it just gets frustrating. You know, as we go through this, how much extra time we got to put in based on, you know, discrepancies that we find or not them not providing all the information we need.
We ought to be charging them for a change.
Mm-hmm. We should. I would do it. But I mean,
in the end, I think all this data is going to provide some really good information for us to use in our formulation of an asset management plan, the financial strategy that we need to follow. So in the end, but it's just been like pulling teeth trying to get there.
I will say, when I talked to Jose one day about the, I think we were looking for costs on something, he didn't seem to understand, in his defense, he didn't understand why we were asking for some of the information, so he felt that the table that had the hours in it that went along with Amendment 6, he felt he had done what we were asking, but he didn't quite understand that, you know, how hard it is to read their stuff. When they send us something, we can't figure out what they're doing. So,
yeah, the way they format things leaves a lot to be desired.
Right. Yeah. So.
We didn't respond.
Yeah.
I think that's the end of my presentation.
Like I said, I'm glad we're on the same side. Thank you, Tom. Any questions of Tom at all for long-range planning? Item next, the IT work. You started
on it. We had AC Barnes, our IT guy, come in, and he installed a firewall in our system to secure it, make it more secure, and to add internet redundancy. He installed 3 SSDs, server on-site backups. I don't quite know what all that is, but he moved all of our server and equipment over to that room over there, which is a more secure room, and the auditors, when we were audited last year, was it Lee? They recommended that we do that to make it safer. It's secure over there, so he did that. He installed Windows 10 on 2 of our computers. One of them was mine, so I'm working through that new. It's new to me, anyway. Thing and transferred the data from from my old computer to the new one. I didn't get it all though, but I guess that's because my stuff was so old. That, I'm so out of date that not all the data was transferred over to the new operating system. Well, we've had a few glitches with Comcast, our internet going out from time to time. We're working with AC on that, and also I think, we're trying to get Comcast to, get them out here to see what's going on, how come we're losing internet all the time, and we get it back, but we're working on that. So that was a upgrade to our and a safety factor on our office machines.
One device that was installed, if the internet goes out on Comcast, it automatically shifts to the other router.
The AT&T one, yeah.
We hope.
We have to test it. Did you test it?
Did we test it? It's being, well, we haven't tested it. We haven't had a power failure, have we, Lee?
No, but usually when you install something like that, you test it once every 6 months or something.
Well,
did
AC test it when he put it in?
I wasn't here, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we just have to do it today, but... Just put it on a list of...
But no, we'll get an answer to that.
Yeah, I mean,
it's appropriate. It's an appropriate
question. It didn't mean to be a criticism.
No.
Well, no, it's...
I know.
I would hope that he would have done it when he installed it, quite frankly.
I would imagine he did, but I couldn't say, because again, I wasn't...
We'll get an answer. We'll get an answer for that.
The SSD is a solid-state drive.
Correct.
The hard drive, the back drive. So it's redundant, solid-state drive and 2 redundancies.
So you know what it is, then. That's good.
Yeah.
But if you do have a failure, I don't think it's, I mean, if it was out 1 or 2 days, it wouldn't be catastrophic, would it? I mean,
no.
It's more for...
It's just day-to-day operations.
Right.
Stuff, you know, it's just a simple, you know, getting Comcast out here to stand up on their equipment and everything else is a...
It's very challenging.
You know, and there's no alternative. I mean, anyway.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. Office generator. We're going to bid. We got a couple of bids.
I got two bids on the office generator, and basically, we're looking ahead to the PSPS events. In the wintertime, we might get storms, you know, and power out, but it's usually not out 4 or 5 days or anything like that. I mean, it could happen. So the generator would come in handy then, but mostly it'd be for the, if there's extended outages, for a fire event or PSPS shutoffs. So we're going to get a 22 kilowatt gas, LPG gas powered generator, 200 amp, it'll be a transfer switch on it. The generator will be mounted on a pad out behind the building. It will have cold weather kit to keep it, you know, protected out there. Let's see. It'll include all the permits that we need and inspections. We'll also have a manual. I'll have a manual switch so that we can choose. Well, we may not want it coming on automatically all the time. If there's a, you know, sometimes the power will go off for like, 10 minutes or something and come back on. And it'll have a delay in there built in, but we could choose when we want to run it or not. So I'll have the manual switch on there. The gas company needs to hook it up. So that'll be a cost to that. About $760 for them. So anyway, the total cost for the thing with gas hooked up and all is around $14,229 on that. Both bids are pretty close, but one of them offered to do it for the pad. So we're going to go with that because it was cheaper, actually cheaper with the pad board. So I'm going to go with that one. That's pretty much it. Oh, propane guy came out and he said, you know, with the generator operating, it uses a lot of propane. Even though you don't think it does, it does. If it's pouring, depending. And we can also turn off parts of the building. If we don't need to have certain things running, we can turn them off to save energy and to save gas too. But he said that, well, we'll see how it goes, but if we do, we may need a new bigger tank, propane tank. The one we have should be adequate, he said, but we'll see. We might have to add that.
As the proud owner of that generator,
it's a Generac, yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be shut off. It can only run 12 hours at a time, and then it's got to be shut off for half an hour, or you start running into issues. We upgraded from a 300-gallon tank to a 500-gallon tank when we had it done. They took the gas out and put it in the new tank, put the new tank in. It was all... no charge from it. It's past gas. It was all you paid for was
the tank rent.
The extra gas tank rental went from $45 a year to $75 a year. It was a no-brainer. The manual switch is all built in. This thing is really awesome. Well, power goes off a minute later, you're back up and running. It's so cool
for 12 hours.
But you need, you know, when we had this event and it
it ran for 5 days. I found out later that it can only run for 12 hours because it ran for, I don't know, 100 hours, and it was fine, but it's, you know, you take run the risk of damaging the engine.
Well, what I was kind of had it in my mind how it might work, and I was saying that in my mind. During office hours, we have it running, and then when we all go home, we just shut it off for the night. I mean, it should work like that. And when we need it, we'll have it.
Excellent.
So that's what I was kind of thinking.
Is this the fridge and freezer, that's all.
What?
The fridge. Is this the fridge and the freezer that's on the end of the week, so we can plan that out.
But we'll have to stock up for the coronavirus. So that thing, we're going to pay attention to that. We'll have a bunch of frozen stuff.
When Pioneer Electric came out and did the audit. They tell you to turn everything on. And we did, you know. Hair dryers, microwaves, all that stuff. And they tell you, okay, you need a 200 amp
mm-hmm.
unit. We didn't need a 200 amp unit. We could have got by with a 100 amp unit. Because, you know, that, like you say, you don't use it all the time.
But I was thinking, though, that in the summertime, is when these events, or when it's hot, probably these events are going to be happening. And we would like to have the air
absolutely
going.
Yeah.
And that's a big draw, so.
Okay.
We take care of business for that. New business correspondence?
Yes. Sharon just left.
She what?
Yeah, I just left.
We'll come back to it. Appointment of the elections chair. Need a volunteer. Jeff.
Jeff.
You know, last year Penny wasn't here, and he got the job.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm going to need some tutelage.
Will do. Gratefully and gladly. Thank you, sir, for volunteering.
Yeah, staff is up there. Two up for election this year, right?
Correct. Paul
No, three. It's three and four. Three and four. Three.
And Tobias. Two this year.
You might have it.
How that happen? We can't have 5 1 year and then two.
Two, three. Two,
three. Oh, I got it. Okay.
I don't know.
Don't you dare.
Yeah.
Don't you dare. You know, I can.
It's been a rough couple of years,
yeah.
I have to say. You know,
oh, come on,
around.
You know, so what?
They all re-up.
It's going to be easy from here on.
Is it? You promise?
How can you miss these charming personalities?
Yeah.
It's my family life that makes it rough.
Yeah, the last couple of town hall meetings we've had, as I'm sure you experienced, people come up to you after the meeting's over with. And they either thank you quietly or they have something nice to say. But it was interesting over the last three or four such meetings, at least one person came up to me and said, I thought about running for the board, or what you guys are doing amazing. I can't do it. Says it's intimidating, the knowledge that the board has. And I thought about that. That's right. Yeah. You know, we're not a board that's into swimming pools and basketballs and badminton nets. This is all business. We've got the right people in the right places, and we take care of it. And when we do get someone that is worth re-election, we encourage them to do so.
The pay is a little odd. I will say.
To pay it, we're in Andrew's
actually.
Andrew, oh, I'm kidding. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Correspondence
again,
please. They have to pay it.
So, yeah, correspondence. We'll go back to that.
Didn't say it was market rate.
We got a letter from a customer protesting about the empty lot fee. Mm-hmm. And is written to the treasurer.
Yeah.
So staff will be working with the treasurer on a response, but part of the 511 has to do with like a membership fee. We don't call it that.
Right.
And remedy for someone like this would be to write to the board, ask the board for consideration on the fee, and that will be imported to her. And if we are asked formally to look into the matter, that's something we would have staff research, and recommendation would come back either to keep things the way they are or to make an adjustment. It's been a sore spot for a lot of people, and if I hear any complaints at all, it's about this particular matter. That hasn't changed since I got on the board in 2006. I think as we look down the road, we'll be looking at certain charges that we have done in the past to see if they still apply, if there's someplace else we can move it. One option would be to simply reduce it down to something and then move the rest of the loss of income into other chargeable accounts that we have. So you're paying for the same thing, but they're different.
Right.
If you have an empty lot and you've inherited it or you've purchased it, my personal experience is I don't have an empty lot. And when I talk to the realtors, they don't go into a lot of in-depth detail about this matter at all. And if you're wrapped up in the excitement of buying a home up here, the last thing you're going to focus on is something like this, if there's an empty lot attached, or you're buying an empty lot for that matter. There's no, oh, by the way, you owe the water company $700 a year.
Which, well,
it's in the disclosure.
It's in if you buy an empty lot, you would ask whether or not it's already approved for utilities, right? Like power and water. Because you build an empty lot in Blue Lake Springs, and there are only four building houses, right?
There's only 200 empty lots.
There are some of the lots, and I'll let the guys here that wrote down this better, are unbuildable.
Right, but that's a different.
And they're purchased, and some lots are purchased for privacy concerns, and I don't want anybody living right next door to me type of deal. But under the disclosure rules, all this should be told to the buyer. Well, we assume it is.
We get a demand. We get a demand from the title company, and we inform the title company of whether and what the fees are, and
right.
We take them, and then in escrow, the fees are divided, prorated, and
right.
So these people do know what they're getting into, but they're also looking at a stack of paper, you know, reading one or two pieces of paper to go, yeah, by the way, the water company's going to be charging.
In purchasing a property, I did 20 years ago, I failed to sign the federal floodplain disclosure. Now, we're at 4,500 feet here. So why on earth do I have to sign a document? But it's required.
Yep.
So I made a trip up here, signed the page, and drove home, thinking that at 4,500 feet, if this floods up here, the insurance companies will be under hundreds of feet of water. So I didn't think there was any sense to that. We don't get a lot of complaints about things that we do, but this is one. And it'll be answered. And we'll offer her the option of coming before the board to talk about it or write to the board and ask for consideration.
And Bob, if I may, one thing that other water companies do is they do allow shares to be given back. That's not something we allow in the bylaws, but if you have a user who permanently does not want to have water, they can give back their share and not receive charges in the future. But the major trade-off that they're receiving is they would need to come up and pay significant connection charges if they were to want water service in the future.
They'd have to pay a connection fee, that's
exactly.
Correct.
Exactly. And when you do that everywhere else, that's tens of thousands of dollars in many cases. And I think that needs to be impressed on the shareholder that they are essentially paying this fee to hold service in the future instead of paying some large connection fee if they were to come back online. And that's what is being captured by that empty lot charge. It's a hard concept for folks to understand, except for this is the alternative to not paying a large connection charge.
But don't we start with our letter outlining, you know, the cost of water is really insignificant. It's the fact that it's there when you need it, or if you need it. That's the big
thing. Yeah.
But these people don't use water.
Right.
So
yeah, it's like buying a car and sitting in the garage.
Yeah.
You know, you pay the same price whether you're driving it every day or not.
That's right.
I mean, it's.
We're going to be talking about, by the way, in a few minutes about reactions when we send letters out to people.
Good.
In one sense, they don't read them. We have hundreds of examples that came in recently, but I'll get to that in a moment.
Okay. I saw a letter that I wanted to bring up, but that's okay. You covered it.
Yeah. Annual meeting date. The Homeowners Association, for some reason, has changed their annual meeting date from the first Saturday of June until the third Saturday. Is that correct?
Wasn't that in their bylaws that it had to be on the first Saturday too?
Yeah, I don't know why they did it, but Tony said they had to, and I didn't get the full explanation in front of me, but I will find it out.
I think the
school calendar.
I think closer to 4th of July, you actually get more people here. You know, we've been up here for 13 years, and I always thought it was odd they did it before school was out.
Well, it'll be interesting closing the schools now, how they're going to cover off the time. School districts, in order to recover the ADA money, or they call it something else now, has to accomplish a certain number of fixed days every calendar year.
I think it's minutes now.
It's the national emergency. When the president calls the national emergency, they probably won't take that into account.
I think they might go over.
Well, the matter before the board is, do we want to stay with the 6th or move to the 27th, or is there any feeling one way or the other?
I'm the chairman of a golf tournament that is happening on that date, so I couldn't do the 27th, but that I don't think that there's a big conflict with the people that are playing golf. The Lions Club golf tournament on the 27th is going to affect a big deal, but I've got to be there.
Yeah, okay. Do the golf players understand the HOA is meeting on the 27th? They probably wouldn't attend anyway, I would imagine.
It's not on my calendar.
Yeah, but
the HOA meeting is
the 27th.
Is the 27th? Because ours was on the 6th, right?
Right.
They were both on the 6th. Original.
On the
6th. We always do on the 6th.
And the back trail history on that is it's always been done that way. And it's always been the first Saturday of June. The HOA has decided to make it the third Saturday for reasons we don't have to know. It's their business. Mm-hmm. Our options are to stay with the 6th or move to the 27th. I think we'll get a better audience on the 27th.
Sure.
No, I would vote for the 27th because people are already there.
Okay, why don't we?
I mean, because you're taking two Saturdays out. Sorry about the golf tournament.
No, that's okay. No.
But three, actually.
Actually, golfers will be playing regardless. They'll play on the 6th if they get a chance.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Barring any other. Okay. The sense of the board is we'll go with the 27th. Be done with it. Item next is the bylaw changes. If you allow me a quick preamble, probably a year ago, or soon after Andrew started with us, which has been almost a year ago, he was asked to take our boilerplate inherited bylaws that no one knows where they came from and to spirit through them, which he has done, and done an incredible job. I would offer of bringing the bylaws up to date. And it's a proposal. We have to take it to the voters. Mm-hmm. And someone in their inimitable wisdom decided we have there's a 75-day window. Once a board approves the changes, there's a 75-day window and has to be presented to our membership, and they vote on it. Now, where the 75 came from is something Andrew and I talked about. And when the world is 30, 60, 90, I don't know how 75 came to be, but it is. You've all had a chance to read through them. There are changes in the Open Meeting Act, or as a result of the Open Meeting Act, there's some changes having to do with language. There's some changes having to do with this. We're in 2020 and not 1920. And if anyone has any comments about any of the changes, now would be the time to make them. Or if there are any questions of Andrew, now would be the time to go through it. I'm going to ask for approval here in a moment after Dave has his say and Andrew speaks, that we advance all of what Andrew has done to the shareholders and let them vote on it at the annual meeting. So with that, Dave, I'll let you go ahead.
Well, after going over it, it looks like Andrew did a great job on it. So I don't have any questions. Maybe the compensation would need to be talked about.
Okay, well, there are a couple of things. One is that we move from a calendar year to a fiscal year financially. That's a change. And the other one has to do with compensation of members. Currently, that's not allowed. What Andrew's proposing is not that we'd be compensated, but if the issue ever comes up, there's something that addresses it in the bylaws.
I think that's right. So this is an issue that's come up a couple times. Directors have asked, what do other districts do, and what is allowed under our bylaws? And the answer was always, your bylaws say directors serve without compensation. But other districts, their practices vary. Sometimes there's a per diem attached. Sometimes there's something more significant. It's really up to the agency. And so the water company has an opportunity in the bylaws to specify some compensation for directors. A typical district of a similar size either does nothing or it has some per diem amount to compensate you for meetings that you attend, trainings that you must attend, that sort of thing. And I checked, usually in at least the Sacramento area, where I usually practice, it's around $100 to $125 per event, up to a maximum of some amount per month. Typical districts, it's, 5 to 10 events a month. I think that most directors here probably attend the monthly meetings and maybe go to one or two other meetings depending on your committee assignments, and that's about it. So that's one policy decision that I think the directors should talk about. And this is not so much a recommendation by me that you should do something, but it's an opportunity for you to have this discussion, because the change can only be made by a vote of the shareholders. The second issue that you should talk about is the process for amending the bylaws. This is something that we talked about early on in recognizing the difficulty of getting a bylaw amendment done, because you have to send it to the shareholders 30 days in advance in writing, which involves a mass mailing, and then you have to get them all on board at the annual meeting to vote on it. The question was asked, can we amend the bylaws through an easier process, through the board that is more engaged and understands these issues in greater depth than a typical shareholder does? And the answer is yes, you can amend the bylaws to allow the board to make those changes in the future. And I proposed a process where the board can make changes unless they are overruled by the shareholders. And that comes from these model corporate laws that I've reviewed. And I think that's a good process. It might be a politically unappetizing one among the shareholders. I don't know. But that's really up for discussion amongst you.
Could I interject this if you allow
me?
Yes,
please.
There are a couple of issues that caused this work for Andrew. One was when we were evicted out of the our office space up at the Snowflake Lodge. We had to go to the shareholders to allow them for us to locate anywhere, because the bylaws said we had to be located within Blue Lake Springs. And the Homeowner Association rules and regulations don't allow, with rare exception, any type of businesses to be within Blue Lake Springs, and we're a little bit trapped. In order to come here, we had to go to the vote of the people. There's an expense to that. That probably costs us $2,000 or $3,000 at a minimum. And the second one had to do with the way we vote and the way the shareholders vote. You can vote more than once on a single matter. You can change your mind. You can vote it, and it's vague. You vote proxies, and it was a mess. And what we're trying to do is create a better business model, and that's what Andrew has before us, and that's what's prompted a lot of this. We don't want to bind ourselves by our own rules where we can't take care of business. The more we can do to affect how we need to take care of things, I think the better off we are. We will always answer to the shareholders. There's no question about that. And I think what Andrew has proposed is truly light at the end of the tunnel. So with that.
The only other issues I wanted to flag for you was director elections, the process. It's changed in the sense that I've modeled it after what you actually do. I'm not saying you haven't been following the bylaws, but you've been following them in large fashion and legally through the last couple of elections. We're just making those changes express, the use of written ballots for director elections. And typically there have not been nominations from the floor in the past. We've eliminated that provision because it doesn't make sense with written ballots. If someone wants to be nominated, Mr. Jones, get their name on the ballot. And that gives the shareholders a good opportunity to figure out who their director should be and vote accordingly.
Plus, if you're nominated from the floor, the shareholder can pull their vote that they've already cast and change it.
And with as many shareholders as you have, I'm glad that it hasn't come up that we haven't been having to count votes today.
Here are the rules.
The final change that I wanted to flag for you was, this was something that I would recommend, but it's really up to you because it's a board process issue, but board voting. The way that board voting works right now, as you all know, is so long as you have a quorum, you have to have a majority of the board, not a majority of the quorum, but a majority of the board to pass any issue. So today, all votes on items for them to pass must be a 4-0 vote. Because you have a quorum present, your majority of your 7-member board, even though several people are absent, you still need a 4-0 vote. One thing that you can consider doing in the way the draft bylaws are is changing that from being a majority of the board to a majority of the directors present. That's how the corporations code works, but you're allowed to change it. You can do whatever you want on this point. But that would make things easier given that you have a large board, absences happen, and it's difficult to get everybody on the same page when you have just 4 directors attending a meeting. So those are the changes. All of this, aside from the updates to make sure that you're following the Corporations Code, they're all up for discussion. They're all policy decisions amongst the board. The other issue is just what process do you want to use for the shareholders? The only one that you're required to do is to send them these drafts 30 days in advance by mail and then allow a vote on them where a majority has to pass them at the shareholder meeting. Other options include, we can put them on the website, you can ask for a comment period, you can ask people to send feedback to an email address, and we can take them into account in the coming month or so before we have to send them out for the June 27th meeting now. All of these things are up for discussion. Whatever process you think is best, you know the shareholders better than I do. What's a good process to get them on board with these changes and happy about voting on the 27th? That's something that is sort of esoteric for a lot of people, but it's what you have to deal with as directors.
So, what's the pleasure of the board?
Do we ask questions after we make a recommendation?
Is there anything in here, Dave, that would affect day-to-day operations? I mean, like...
No. No, I know where you're going. No.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
No, that's a very appropriate question. And one thing that I will tell you that I watch very closely are things like that.
Okay.
You know, we're not going to tell him how to take care of his business. He's going to tell us what he's doing. And we may set up some guidelines on that tell the general manager where he can rule and where he can't, or the monies he can spend. But when it gets down to the other stuff, we're not the management of the company. He is.
Okay, so we didn't change any of that.
No.
All right.
So where you said the fiscal year change, we're going to go to a fiscal year.
Yes.
Where am I missing that?
It's under G.
It's in there, trust me.
It's under section 4, I think.
Which article?
Article 4, maybe?
It is section 3, powers, and then it goes G. I'm reading the...
Which article? Which page?
Well, page 56, if you're
in the packet.
The red line.
Okay. That's fine.
I would add a sentence along the definition of attendance. They can do it by telephone, or they have to be present if somebody gets an order.
So section J, adopt an annual budget on or before the start of each fiscal year of the company. That's the duties of the duties.
Item 3I under power.
So
that is one of those many changes that I copied and pasted straight out of the law.
Right.
So that one is a change, but it's one that's required by the corporation.
Okay, so yeah. I'm going to ask a dumb question. Is our fiscal year July 1st?
Yeah, it's not dumb at all, yes.
Okay, well, as treasurer, I feel really dumb.
We don't do fiscal year now. We currently do calendar year.
But we would change
July.
You don't have a
actually, this is a good time to do it, but with the payment system.
It's like they just changed the law.
Where people are not paying once a year.
I think you can zoom in and be counted as attendance under the Brown Act.
Correct.
So our definition of attendance is what? A telephone or present?
It's both. The Open Meetings Act allows both.
I would make that explicit in there.
Okay.
So there's no argument. It's minor, but somebody...
No. Now's the time to do it.
But if you're going to talk about compensation, you've got to have
what page? What page are you on? What I don't know.
That's number section 7, form. So if you're going to have compensation for attendance at meetings,
can you tell me what page that is? Because I don't know. I can't tell.
Form is on page 6.
Mine's on page 58.
58.
Majority of authorized numbers shall be necessary to constitute a quorum.
Okay.
So the question is, what's the definition of attendance? So if you're on the telephone, are you part of the quorum? So we should say that it can be either by telecommunications or presence physically or whatever the right words are. Because you saw what the Brown Act, right?
Yeah, Newsom has suspended all of the in-person requirements for public agency meetings, yes.
Okay.
Got it. I'll capture that change.
Unless somebody...
Other comments?
So I felt there is a blank in the director compensation issue because I didn't feel
yes
like weighing in on that issue. You can set something now. You can. The other option is to say the board shall adopt a resolution each year setting the director compensation. It's really your preference because it's
and mutual water question. Companies can compensate their directors.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Now, as with all things, you know, your fiduciaries. Of the corporation. So, not that anybody doesn't already know that, but you know, there are limits set. If they're not monetary, but they run by the rule of reasonableness, and that's what you already do, so.
Do the directors then, if they receive compensation here, get a 1099 from me at the end of the year, for if it's over the 650 or whatever?
That's right.
Other comments? Now the comments will all be included. Do you want to see another draft of, and if you're comfortable with moving in general, everything that's been proposed, I suggest we do that. Because we want to comply with this magical 75-day rule.
I need to get this out to the shareholders. The shareholders need to vote on this, get it back to me, so then I can count ballots and their decision and have it read at the meeting for the 27th.
Well, no. Actually, the ballots are only for the election of directors. We're only authorized to use the ballots for election of directors.
So the shareholders don't have to vote on these bylaw changes?
They will.
Right. So
they can vote by proxy. Though.
Right. They have to vote by proxy because we don't have all 2,000 shareholders here. We have 150.
That's right. So there will be a call for the vote at the meeting. We will count the proxies ahead of time. And then there will actually be a vote of the shareholders who are actually sitting there at the time.
This will be in June.
See, that's what we wanted to, that's what you wanted to sort of...
Well, see, what the problem we run into is the, what is a quorum? Is a quorum of those voting, or is a quorum of the shareholder base?
So,
period, paragraph, as they say.
It is a majority of the shareholders.
Right. Okay.
Present.
No. Total.
Okay, majority of the shareholders would be like 1,017.
And the only way you can reach that is by proxy voting.
Well, we might.
Well, we're billing everybody every 2 months, right?
Yeah.
So you can put in, we can put this on the website.
No, they need to have it mailed to them. They'll never look at it. They don't even look at the bill.
So then you put in when you bill, you put in the proxy postcard to vote, and then you have a statement. This is on the website, and if Andrew can look it up and... If we don't receive anything, we assume it's a permanent.
For under the corporation's code, they have to return the proxy code, proxy card. Appointing typically, you appoint the directors as their proxy. Yeah.
So they can appoint the directors. If they don't tell me a name, then the directors are appointed.
But if you have a way to finagle it to where you can get a majority, I mean. Silence is acceptance.
No.
It won't work that way for proxy cards.
Well, if there's a way to work it out where you can facilitate. But I would put this on the website.
What is it? 8 pages?
10, 11
pages?
Yeah, you would put the old one, the track changes, and the new one.
So put the old, not the red line, but just put the old and the new?
No, you would put the track changes copy.
Okay, I like that. So the old, the track, copy, the red line,
and there'd be three.
And then the draft.
Right.
Correct.
So there'd be three on the website.
Okay.
Then if you have a way to send the proxy thing with the billing statement with it.
No, they have those separate.
All right.
We
so
do
then,
a separate mailing.
Right, we don't even do that.
Whatever the rules are. But then you would... give them until whatever, what is it, June 27th? Whatever.
We usually give them to the end of May.
Right.
Because our meeting was the first Saturday.
Yeah.
So now we could change it to the second Saturday in June if you wanted.
So then I would put, like, we want them by whatever May date is. Then, in like, a little footnote, you would say that if it's not received by May 31st, then... The company may recontact you and give you to June 27th, something like that.
Okay.
Because if you
never work, we usually come up biting fingernails by the time we're ready to have everybody's vote counted because we don't even have 400 and some odd votes. You've got to be a member in good standing, which counts off about 20 of them. So you're right. We need at least over 1,000.
to change our bylaws.
And we never
get there.
We never get. We last year we didn't get there. The year before we did.
To get to allow us to come here, we got maybe 400 or 500 votes. Yes. There were 100 and some odd said no.
Yeah.
You know,
that's right.
Well, it's 10% of everybody who's going to say no.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not a majority. It's 25% of the. So I only, it's 25% of the members in good standing. I don't have a majority. I have 25% of members in good standing. I don't think that's in here.
So
that's what we have before.
Yeah. That's the quorum. You're right.
Yeah.
Mutual water companies can have a lesser quorum requirement.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So 25%, which is at, what, 400, a little over 400? And
so
we barely break that.
Is this the original text in blue?
That's the new text, yeah.
Do you have the original?
The original is the first one. The very first one is the original. Then we get to the red line, then we get to his draft.
2570, about 250, 300.
I'm re-looking at this.
Yeah.
You know what? You were right, Bob, actually. It says the bylaws can be amended by a majority of the eligible votes present in person or by proxy.
Yeah.
So it actually is not.
So we don't have to have
it. It is a much lesser threshold. So you get the 25%,
it's still 25%.
And then a majority of that 25%, the shareholders who are present by person by proxy.
Of those votes.
Sorry,
that are
you're
present.
Right.
Yeah, so we don't need proxy cards.
Well, you can use the proxy card, certainly, to get up to that 25%.
Where does it say 25%?
Wait a second. The question is it?
It's in the quorum requirements. It's in a separate section.
Section 4 of Article 7.
That's the directors.
Article 7, Section 4.
Of the original bylaws, right?
I don't know. It's in blue. It was Section 6.
That's his red line.
Section 6 is the one that's...
No, I don't think Section 6 applies to it. So.
No, the presence in person or by proxy of 25% of all shareholders in good standing of the company shall constitute a quorum for the transaction in business at meeting of the shareholders.
Meeting, proxy vote is not a meeting.
Well, the proxy vote is intended to do exactly that.
Right.
It's assuming that you're going to get low turnout.
I can't attend this meeting, so giving you my card.
This is why we have lawyers.
What they do is they
write
that
things
way,
there.
And they want to change it at the meeting.
I would accept that.
We're not doing that.
Right.
So
good.
I'm sorry. I take back what I said earlier. It really is just going to be need to be passed by a majority of the shareholders present by proxy or actually attending.
Right.
So you can likely
so it's not a quorum.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not a quorum. It doesn't say quorum in there.
No,
but we have trouble getting the proxies back.
I know, but if they don't get it back, that means they're not present. So
and
you're,
they can't vote.
Well, then
right.
You know we don't need them. We just need.
If we're offering a shareholder a chance to vote by mail, that's what the proxy is.
Correct.
And they don't.
They're abstaining.
Then we accumulate what does come in. And the problem we run into at a meeting is asking them to vote again. Some of them have already voted by proxy.
Correct, by appointing the board of directors or some other
right.
person as their.
And that's what's created this other monster that we don't conform to, quite frankly. So the question is, we already know who can vote and how they can vote. Can we go to the annual meeting, say you have copies of our updated bylaws, do you approve it, and there are 100 people in the room, and 55 say yes and 45 say no. Does that count?
That's only part of it, though. Because then we would look at Lee and say, what is the vote by the proxy voters? And you'll say... 150 have appointed the board of directors.
Because the proxy voters, some of them are sitting there.
Right.
So they get to vote, they're voting twice.
No.
See, that's the problem we've run into.
Okay.
And that's what prompted some of this. We've got to get rid of this trash system we've got.
Yeah. I know, but if you send out the proxies to the same address as the billing address, like if they're in other places and you give them till May 31st to have it postmarked. If they don't do that, then they've abstained. And then we just count all those proxies, and if there's more in favor than the change is made, if there's less than the change is not made, and then we proceed. And if somebody wants to challenge it, I don't think my reading of that right now is that you don't have to have 25%. The quorum is not on there. There's no corporation in America that requires a quorum for a proxy vote. I mean, everybody owns shares. So
we call for a proxy vote. We get the results.
Right. That's okay. It.
We're now at the annual meeting. We don't ask them again if now they want to vote.
No, we just tell them at the annual meeting that
the results are.
Yeah.
And the
900 abstain.
Yeah.
What you're proposing would likely work mathematically. The other options keep the people who have already proxy voted from voting again is you check them in at the door. And you just say, have you already returned your proxy? And you'll have the list there. And if they have not, then Lee or Dave or somebody from the water company can hand them a red card or a green card. And that's the thing that they will need to hold up to have their vote counted.
Or they can mark it all.
I'd like them all to be voted before they walk into that.
Yeah,
that
that's what we wanted to get away from. Is that?
That's what we wanted to get away from, is us being out there counting votes.
No, you don't have to. If you send out the proxy, then you just have a date that it has to come back.
Okay, and that's it.
That's it. Yeah. That's the end of the
Yeah, why do we have to call for a vote at the annual meeting?
It should be a done deal.
Because the way that it says now is by proxy or by attendance.
Yes. Because the thing that counts under the bylaws is what is the vote at the meeting. Mm-hmm. But one of the votes at the meeting is the proxy votes. Because they are saying, I am voting at the meeting this way, even though really they're sitting in their house.
Yeah, but I don't see. If it says or, that means you can do either one. It doesn't say both. So if it says both, then you have to give them both opportunity. If it says in presence or by proxy, this board can say by proxy. It doesn't happen. Unless it says both has to be to the person. It doesn't say both. It just says or.
It does say or, but...
Okay, so then if we're going to be legalese-type people, then that says or doesn't mean both. If they meant both, they would put both. So that's the...
I don't think we can assume the folks who wrote the bylaws knew either way. But the
point is that we have... You know, you have a situation where you have 2,000 people. You're going to have maybe 150. So you're never going to get, 2,000 people at the annual meeting. So for us to be responsible, we need to give them a fair chance to vote. The people that don't live here have to have the same opportunities to be heard as the people that live here year-round. So if we say you have to be present to vote, or we give people a second chance to vote present, we're not treating all the shareholders equally. Only way we can treat them equally is by proxy. So from that point of view, you would send it to them, and if you treat them equally, that means the address on file, which would be the billing address, and you put the card in there, you can pay for the stamp, and say it has to be postmarked by a certain day.
Okay, so everybody gets a proxy card. It's 2,000, 2,034 of those go out.
Right.
And we get a number back.
Right.
We count the yeses and nos.
That's it.
And we disclose the finding at the annual meeting.
Correct.
We don't ask for a vote.
So if the proxy card doesn't come back, they're an abstainer.
They voluntarily abstain.
They're not present. They're not present. Right. They're not counted towards the quorum or the annual.
Yeah,
so
we're not.
All we do is count the proxy cards that come back.
That's correct, because they're not. They're not required to vote.
Right.
So
they can abstain.
So we have the proxy cards, and we count them up ahead of time, driven by some drop-dead date.
Right.
And at the annual meeting, the elections, somebody stands up and says, we got the vote back. The changes in the bylaws have been affirmed by a vote.
And we put the bylaws on the website. And in the proxy card, we tell them where it is on the website. And
they've already voted.
When the proxy card goes out,
right?
You have to have this already on the website.
We'll handle the advertising. That's what you're talking about.
Well, they have to have access, reasonable access.
Right. Well, normally we send the mailing as, and I'm squeezing that occurred, it has the people who are running for office,
yes. Okay.
The directors, and then anything they're voting else on, if there's changes to the bylaws or something like that. So why wouldn't we just send an entire packet out
like we normally
do? I was thinking of the cost of...
have you not gotten one of these before?
No, I have. I'm just thinking that if you send somebody 60 pages...
Well, why don't we just send them the new one to put the old ones in the red line on the...
Bill, I can assure
you, something like that.
I can assure you, and we're going to be talking about it in a minute, right. And the classic here is, we haven't covered it yet, but is the billing that we sent out.
Yeah.
We sent out 2,034 billings, about 10 to 12% called, says they couldn't understand anything about it until we said, well, if you look in the upper right-hand corner, oh, I didn't read that.
Okay.
And when we shifted through all the people who didn't read it, there were only about 4, maybe 9, that had a real issue with it.
Okay.
So we've learned from experience that whatever goes out, people don't read.
Okay, so...
And that's not indictive. That's just been our experience. I think, I like the idea that you're talking about. We send out a letter saying that we're looking at these changes, and we're going to ask you to vote yay or nay on them. And as compact as we can make the original and the new one, we do so, whether it's by lining out colors and so forth. And whatever comes back from the proxy, and that's what you're proposing, that's it.
Right.
That's it.
That's fair to everybody.
It gives everybody a chance to vote. And we're not going to ask, because that's the morass we're in now, asking the people to attend the annual meeting, how do you vote on this? Because half of them says, I think we've already voted, and half of them don't know. They have spouses that do the voting, and never, you know, it's
they
just...
They don't talk to each other, yeah.
It's a big cluster verb.
Right.
And if we can get away from that, we're miles ahead.
And the other thing is...
That's legal.
We can use the argument that the proxy vote, instead of in person, is because we would be putting an unusual hardship on shareholders that don't live in the area. It would be an unusual hardship.
Well, we don't give it an option.
Right. Yeah, no.
They have the option to vote. That's where it stops.
Okay.
All by mail.
Yeah, that's where it stops.
So I think we can make this work. I think what we have to do, though, is if we're going to say this is a by mail vote, I think we have to send them a ballot rather than just a proxy.
We do ballot slash proxy. Which is very confusing.
I think that
works.
So the ballot says, do you approve these changes? Yes, no. And the proxy says, do you appoint the board of directors or someone else to be your voter?
Vote for the two.
And then you have to sign, there's a caveat there that it has to be signed. So not everybody votes, everybody says, yeah, I agree to this,
and they don't sign. That's a standard voting practice.
Yes.
If you don't sign your ballot in the presidential election, if you don't sign it, they don't count it.
Or the primary.
Exactly. So that's the last caveat that I need for that vote to be counted.
Yeah.
So I think that works. And then assuming the board in just a minute approves these bylaw changes, then that will be what is the proxy vote is using.
So the
proxy
one side is the election, the other side is the voting for if there's anything to come before the shareholders.
Okay.
You know how to do all this, right?
Yes.
We do.
Yes, we're all together.
Better than I do.
We're all together on this?
Yes.
Motion of the board is to move forward with the recommendations of council.
With one caveat, don't we need to put in a dollar amount for the, or how you're going to...
That was still undecided as the director compensation.
The vague sentence in there that as determined by the board annually.
And that's totally permissible.
Right. That way it's not, and then, you know, it's not a... It's not going to be a number.
It's not a snap, yeah. And it doesn't hold us up from doing this today.
And we're taking in person out of the Section 4 quorum?
Or in person or by phone?
No, this is for the shareholders. Directors. This is for the shareholders, though.
The director should be in person or by
phone.
Yeah. But what about the quorum for the shareholders?
It's
Does it matter?
Fun.
Why? Why do we need 25% to have a meeting?
We could be able to take that out then. If you're saying if you don't vote, you're not.
Right.
No, but it doesn't imply the vote.
Well, 25%.
No, it actually does.
It does.
There's no quorum for shareholders for a proxy vote. You have 2,000 people as a quorum for your proxy vote because you mailed it to everybody.
Yes.
That's your meeting. Your meeting is by mail.
No, but this.
Look at
the special meetings.
This one's really complicated. It's not special. But the easy answer.
But listen to me. Don't just tell me that I'm wrong. Okay. Under quorum, it's set for a special meeting, and that I realize it's not the annual meeting. The presence in person or by proxy of 25% of all shareholders in good standing of the company shall constitute a quorum for the transaction of business at any meeting of the shareholders. My question is, do we want to change that so if we ever have a special meeting, we don't need to get to 25%?
And
that's 500
people. Leave that in and take it out.
The answer is, that is required by law. So the shareholders may not act at a meeting in typical corporations unless 50% are present. And present means either voting by proxy or, raising your hand.
Okay.
25% is our special gift from the corporations code that lets us operate with less.
That's 510, by the way.
Yeah.
And then the voting, the vote of shareholders at any shareholders meeting may be by voice or by ballot. Provided, however, that all elections for directors shall be by written ballot.
And typically,
we
have always done by ballot.
Right.
That will probably continue.
Okay.
Future.
I just want to make sure. Cause
so we're leaving the 25 in.
We're what?
We're leaving that 25 in, section 6 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
25%.
Section
25% 4. 25%
section
of all
4. Which is different than 25% of those voting.
Right. Well, and then if you read section 5 under voting, it says the board of directors shall designate a member of the board or a company employee to be responsible for verification of voting eligibility of all shareholders at the annual meeting or special meeting of shareholders. I don't know if that changes. Because we won't be voting at the annual meeting anymore.
Correct.
That's correct.
But you will, again, it's a technicality. You are voting at the meeting if you're voting by proxy.
Okay.
I ask for board votes before we get there.
It's done ahead of the
meeting. I just want to make sure that there's not something,
that doesn't drive us over.
That's conflicting, yeah. That's
correct.
All.
Okay. Have we thoroughly confused ourselves?
Yes.
Good.
As long as Andrew's got it figured out.
Long as there's lawyers, there will be confusion.
There will be confusion.
First thing I do.
Is there a motion?
Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah, the motion.
1615. The motion is to move forward with counsel's recommendation.
I so move.
I'll second.
All in favor say aye.
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 And opposed, signify by saying nay.
All right.
Oh, he's still there.
Yeah.
Good, we need him.
Thank you.
I am.
Got it.
Well, we have four. Five. That's good.
Four. Item next, reportable items.
We have bylaw changes on the list of the reportable items that you see in there from the last meeting, January 11th. The bylaw changes are ongoing slash complete. The loan program, you all know that we do have one person that has asked for and been issued a loan process. He's the only one so far in everybody that's been out there. Connection letters in progress. Oh, that's all the connection letters for, I don't know why that's in there. Can I take that out?
Mm-hmm.
Shareholder letter we send as a reminder of the connection complete date. That's just Okay, so I'm removing that. Let's see, MC Engineering, the discussion action to be taken with MC Engineering regarding the performance of severing their contract. That's been complete. The Sharon, Tom, and Dave have both brought this to MC's attention. Discussing the amendment questions, that's complete. I'm not sure on the last one, then discussing the GIS database, did we complete that by saying we're not going forward with that?
At the time we did this, there was You know, we're pretty sure that Billy and I already put in our 2 cents, but I had ongoing on there, but we can change that too.
So we're changing it to
complete.
Complete, and that's correct.
Discussion over. I mean, it's pretty much decided.
New action items at the city's board meeting. Legal action for non-compliant hookups. Oh, so staff will be talking to Andrew about how we go forward with legally making people hook up to their, which is an odd way of saying that, the legal action for non-compliant hookups.
That's on Andrew and Dave.
That's right, staff and Andrew.
It's developing a due process template, if you will.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
The other action item is Dave to speak with USDA representative, in this case, I believe it's Stravinsky, regarding the $85,000 reimbursements of the PRVs.
Yes.
Is that actionable?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Dave to speak with MC Engineering regarding the spreadsheets and the tables and the list that Tom has brought up with them so that we can update the current costs and assessments going forward because we need a good data base.
That's for the asset management plan.
Correct, asset management plan. Okay, I put that in there. Actionable items, Dave to review the corrective action plan with John and MCE. Does that make sense, Dave?
Mm-hmm. No. Action plan?
To make sure they're actually responding to
Tom's LRPC.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. To make sure that they're doing that.
I was thinking the asset management plan.
No, the corrective action plan. And that's all I have for adding additional.
Okay. I just want to bring up an item before we get to closed session, and this falls under the category of reactions. We sent out, as you know, the first billing in our new system that we've been talking about for 3 or 4 years. And over the last 3 or 4 years, we've said every year, and every meeting that we've had, and every chance we've gotten to talk to our customers, it's coming. Bi-monthly. Most of our customers up here come from the Bay Area, and at one time were customers of the East Bay Mud, who has a bi-monthly billing period. The billings go out to 2034. We encumber a minimum of 250 phone calls, almost in the first 2 or 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Overloads the system, if you will. And the majority of the people calling did not read the bill. Just didn't read it. In fact, when it was pointed out to them that what they're asking for is the amount due after a certain date, they said, oh, I didn't read that. Or,
mine didn't say that.
I paid my bill. I already paid my $811. Yes, you did, but that was last year. Oh. And after talking to 250 customers, we've learned a couple of things. People don't read things. We sent a letter out with the billing that was from the treasurer. I can guarantee you they didn't read that. And the document you have in front of you now is the second rendition of the original billing went out with about 80% of the information removed to make it easier to find what's applicable. What is different about this billing is the numbers are on the left side of the page. Most of the bills you get in the mail, the numbers are on the right side of the page. We have the block of important messages. We've reduced it down to 3. We're going to change number 2, but we've reduced it to the point where we want people to read it, and they don't. I didn't experience any of the phone calls, but talking to people that did, it was incredible. After talking to about 250 of our customers, with the exception of 5, 6, 7, or 8, or 9, everyone understood once it was called to their attention, their answer was on the page before, and they said, oh, I didn't read that. So I only bring it up to you for as a profit of an experience when you say, well, we'll send a notice out to the end. We've been sending notices out. We've been telling people in the bubbler. We've been on Nextdoor, my favorite. And every meeting we've had, we've
We've been beating this drum loudly to the point, I think, of boredom. We've been telling people over and over, no, this is coming. I already paid my bill. You mean I have to pay everything now? Can I pay my bill now for the year? Somebody next door says, oh, yeah, they'll take your money. Sure. No, we're not. We've committed, at least on the short run, to accept people that, well, I'm used to paying this all. I pay it in January, and I don't want to be bothered with a bill every other month. Well, you're going to be bothered. Sorry. We're not going to take annual payments. We agree to do it. I think it's, personally, I think we shouldn't have, but it's been done. And you'll still get a billing every other month. Well, what's this USDA repayment res? And we explain that. And they go, oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that. Well, I didn't use any water. Well, there's no water charge on here. Oh.
Well, I used some. It just wasn't enough.
Yeah, but you didn't use enough to get charged for it.
Right.
And we had, the original billing went out and it had water used by month. That was...
Mm.
Yeah, so we combine them in a two-month groupings.
Oh.
And
I saw someone said that they had, that the charge, the repayment charge was going to look at either or. It was going to be an either or, and they got charged.
There was a couple of people that got both. They got the lots and they got the residential. That was by error, and we reduced their bill by
$43.
Okay.
Yeah, we've had a couple of glitches. One has to do with automatic payment systems and GPS or PD or
BDS.
BDS. Mm-hmm. BDS, who is the purveyor of the billing process, has agreed to make any changes we deem necessary to try and get our message across. The only reason I bring it up to you. A few minutes ago, we said we're going to be sending people copies of the bylaw changes. Well, I just, you know, keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's basically what we do.
It just, you know, I was in talking to the staff, and I spent a fair amount of time with them this week about their experience in dealing with this bill. I was appalled by what I thought were some pretty reasonable, smart human beings when their attention was called to the part of the billing that they were questioning. If they read the two-line paragraph, it was answered. And if you follow Nextdoor like I do, all this has suddenly disappeared. Nobody's jumping up and down about the billing. One thing we're going to change under important messages: we cannot accept cash for payment. We're going to take out that cash only is not either unacceptable. Or leave it out completely. We're not a bank. We don't have the ability to. Or we don't want to get into that ability. And we're going to use the important messages for just that. We're thinking about color coding it,
mm-hmm.
maybe in red to have it jump out. That's going to cost a little more money. There are water companies and other businesses that do that. The tendency that when the human being opens this up, knowing it's a bill. You go right to what, how much. You go to the how much part first. Well, the how much part is in two places on the bill. It's up in the right-hand corner. It's down here on the bottom.
It's hard to figure out.
Yeah. So. And.
The font needs to get there.
I'll let you talk. You took the phone calls. I mean, some of them were hysterically funny, and some weren't, but. If you want to add to that, sure.
No, there's no reason. I don't want to. No, it was interesting, though, to find out. I mean, one day we had 103 people call in saying, I got a bill. I paid $799. Why am I getting a water bill for $135.60? And not that 103 is... 103 for us is way over low. We usually get 10 a day, maybe, calls. They were very confused this time. So we need to make this simpler. We need to make it bigger and more easily understood.
Yeah.
So it's open for ideas, discussions, thoughts.
Well, let me come up with, let me give me another month, and let me show you what we come up with for the next billing cycle, if that works for everybody. I can tell you if that assuaged the masses out there and we don't have any more phone calls, or it didn't work, color coding was not right, help me.
Was one of the options, because I tried to, you know, I wanted to set up automatic payments. I'd rather not have the the paper billing. Was that something you could check off to stop the paper billing?
Yes. I
thought it was a piece of cake other than setting up the auto
payment. Other than setting up. It was
a little bit of a glitch, but it was me not putting in all the information they wanted. You know, I kept coming back, you didn't do this or you didn't do that, you know.
You know, every time I log in, it says that page is expired, and then I hit something else, and then it pops up.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
I don't either, but I got it. It took me a little while.
Well, we're feeding all that back to BDS.
Yes.
Stop laughing.
Yes.
How many people have signed up to just get the online bill? Have more people signed up?
No. No. Maybe 1%. Maybe not even 1%.
They still
that
want the
paper. I want to receive. I want something in my hand. Well, you can go online. Even when we tell them they can use a credit card online, it's, well, I'm used to giving you a check. We got this many checks in the mail.
Isn't the credit card online? It's like getting a discount.
So we might have to come up with another way. I really would like everyone to be online for getting the emails for the bills to, you know, make it cheaper for us.
Yeah.
And use a credit card.
Right.
So I'm going to be putting on there no charge for using credit card next time. That there is no charge for using credit card. There is no charge.
No conveyance fees.
No conveyance fees.
Well,
to them. Convenience conveyance.
Yeah, it's conveyance. So we can use that.
You know, in at the Lions Club, I think we've got 36 or 37 members. There's two that still don't have email.
Yes, I don't have a computer.
I think the standing population here may be broader than that. You know, we've been beating that drum, among other things, for years about, we'd like to get your email address. We've asked the Homeowners Association to share. They won't do that, even though the customer base is the same. So we've been compiling email addresses, and the reaction we get is, I don't believe in it, as they're crumpling up the form that we've given them. There's one woman that stood in front of me crumpling up the form, and I'm not going to share mine, and I'm not going to give it to you. And I said, well, I don't need it. I'm just making the offer that it's an option you can use if you choose to do so. And the reaction from when all said and done, and we count up the online access, the percentage is pretty low. Well, we need more millennials up here.
Wow.
Well, coronavirus is going to take care of that.
What? I heard that.
Okay,
thank you. Coronavirus. Here, we made it this far with that.
Sorry.
Here, we made it. Okay. Okay.
Adjourn.
Do which?
Give me adjourn.
No.
Okay.
We have two matters for closed session.
Right. So we can adjourn open.
Yeah.
Okay. Will you do so? Do we have some motions to adjourn to executive?
I need a motion to adjourn to executive session.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Second.
Great. Thank you.
2:57.
I need to shut that off. Do you excuse us?
Yes. Goodbye.